It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Stacy has the week off. Glenn Fleischman sits in, along with Aunt Pruitt and Jeff Jarvis. We'll give you another pitch for why Mastodon is better than Twitter, even though these guys don't agree. We'll talk about what's happening with the blue check and the gray check. Oh, wait a minute. The gray check's gone. It's just the blue check. We have other things to talk about besides Elon Musk and Twitter. Google and Facebook, big layoff coming up. We're sorry about that, Facebook guys. A lot more ahead. This Week in Google is next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 689, recorded Wednesday, November 9th, 2022. Rusticated and rectified. This Week in Google is brought to you by 8 Sleep. For a limited time, 8 Sleep is offering Twit listeners up to $400 off their Sleep Fit holiday bundle by visiting 8sleep.com/twig. After November 30th, go to 8sleep.com/twig to check out the pod and look for other exclusive holiday savings or save $150 at checkout with our normal offer. And by Cashfly. Deliver your video on the network with the best throughput and global reach, making your content infinitely scalable. Go live in hours, not days. Learn more at cashfly.com. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse, the Twitterverse, the Facebookverse. There's a lot of news this week. Stacy has the week off. She's traveling, but Glenn Fleischman has joined us. It's Yay! Great to have you, the master of Flong at Glenn.fun. Hi, Glenn.
Hello there. Thanks for having me back.
Jeff Jarvis is here. He is the Leonard Tau Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. He is the very model of a modern journalist professor. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, boss.
Were you up late last night?
No, I did not watch anything last night.
Oh, you were smart.
I refused to. Yeah. I've had it on mute most of the day today.
You didn't miss anything.
I didn't miss anything. I didn't miss a damn thing. I've been happily on Mastodon, thanks to you.
Ooh, we're all Mastodonistas here, including Aunt Pruitt from Hands On Photography. Hello, Aunt.
Hello, sir.
How now, let me ask you, all three of you, are you Twitter refugees or is it Twitter plus Mastodon? Glenn, you're on both, right?
Twitter plus, but holy cow, things picked up so quickly. I think I'm going to be Twitter minus soon. I mean, I don't plan to leave. Twitter's been very useful and for me in a lot of ways professionally. I made a lot of friends there in the olden days, the sort of pre-2015 days. But a lot of the people who I spend the most time reading and talking with have already moved to Mastodon and they're active over there. And I'm like, well, maybe the parties moved to Elephant's House. Maybe that's where we'll wind up converging.
Jeff, you're both, right?
Oh, I'm definitely both, but I'm finding I'm spending more time on Mastodon. I wrote a post about it, which I presume we might get to, and I made a point on Twitter of saying that you taught me everything I know about Mastodon. My expertise of 5 days is all from you.
I thought Regis Philbin everything he knows about Twitter, and so it just comes around. And Ant, you're doing both or no?
I'm sort of in limbo right now with Twitter. I haven't been on in about a day and a half.
Yeah.
I saw that Nazi-looking thing, and it sort of rubbed me the wrong way coming from the leadership. And I don't know, my community's there.
That's the hard thing, isn't it, leaving them behind?
I've grown my brand through Twitter and LinkedIn, and I've enjoyed my community there. But at the same time, some of the stuff that I saw from the leadership, that it rubbed me the wrong way. So it's my account is still there, but I can't say that I've actively checked anything in the last day and a half.
It's really interesting. We have had, and my lower third has said my Mastodon handle for 3 years, Twit Social, which probably a lot of people look at it and go, what's twit.social/@Leo? What is that? And no idea what that is.
I know now.
Well, that's what's interesting. Now you're seeing every BBC, Time Magazine interviewed the creator. Mastodon's all over the place as if... And this is where I think there's a little bit of a mistake that you're going to take Twitter, just like you did with MySpace and replaced it with Facebook. You're going to take Twitter and just replace it with Mastodon. And I think a lot of Twitter users will be very disappointed when they get to Mastodon. It's been, for the last 3 years, it's been very quiet in Mastodon. It's been a very cozy little corner of the world. It's been like a cafe where no one really goes, but the people who are sitting there know each other. They love it. They love the quietness of it. And it has changed 100% over the last 5 days because more than, I think it's now 2 million people have exited Twitter and gone, or at least created a Mastodon account. And I don't know how many have exited Twitter. I exited Twitter. I've exited it before, but I had it up to here. Well, you know, when I got 3 jokes about masturbating in a row over my morning coffee from Mr. Musk, the owner, I said, you know, this is not the place I want to be.
Well, Nazi stuff, even worse.
Yeah.
You know, I had every advertiser.
Yeah, all the advertisers are gone. And he says, this is activists. Or, no, Elon, it doesn't quite work that way. But anyway.
So, Leo, yesterday I had in class Meredith Clark, who's one of the leading experts in Black Twitter. She has a book coming out next year about it, Oxford University Press. She's brilliant. And I asked the question, I said, is there going to be a Black Mastodon? And what she said, I hope she won't mind me repeating this, I don't think she will. She said, it doesn't offer all the affordances that were necessary to create Black Twitter. The ability to have a place where you could get to anybody, and she would say it better than I could. Mm. And I saw Mary Rembrandt Olm, who's an amazing academic, medieval academic. I forget her Twitter handle. She tweeted about this and said, you know, I have an account over there. I got the go bag. But, you know, what I'm seeing is a white exodus. And, you know, you're going to leave us alone here? And I remember Andre Brock Jr., who wrote Distributed Blackness, who I've quoted often on the show. I haven't talked to him about this in the last few weeks, but you know, he said when Musk started circling this wagon, he said, you're going to have to really kick us off here because we built something here. So I think that there's a lot of communities like that that are going to be very reluctant to have to pick up and move somewhere else and are going to fight for where they are. So I don't want to leave Twitter because I want to be there for that. I don't want to be there around that. And Twitter is the weaker for not having it. I mean, Mastodon is much the weaker for not having a Black Mastodon.
Well, Mastodon has plenty of Black users. There is a Black Mastodon. What you're hearing and what you're going to hear over and over again is Twitter apologists on Twitter saying, oh, yeah, that Mastodon is BS. That's no good. You don't want that. There's nothing good there. Meanwhile, there are plenty of people of color on Mastodon.
There is plenty of quote Black Mastodon.
But it's Twitter people who are justifying staying on Twitter. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You can stay in the burning house. Everything is fine. No problem.
That's the thing.
And I think communities of interest form. Already there's a Mastodon for journalists of all people.
Let's talk about that. So Adam Davidson, ex NPR, New York Times, New Yorker, who's now up in Vermont, he said to me, well, gee, maybe we should start a server. And I kind of said, you know, you go on stage. And Adam did it all on his own and started Jurna.host, Jurna.host. And I just agreed to use some money from the center I run to give him 6 months headway here, and he has a small tech team helping him already. He needs tech help. If anybody else wants to help him, they're all volunteer. Because it's verifying the journalists who were there, which is a very tricky question.
No, and again, that is a Twitter mindset that is wrong, because that's not how verification works on Mastodon. So again, BS. That's a centralized blue check.
Mastodon.
Let me show you how you verify yourself on Mastodon.
Leo, I'm telling you something different now. Listen, I know.
A centralized blue check is.
No, wait. Give me a second here. Dan Hahn put up a great post a week ago saying that what he hoped would happen is that the Washington Post would create its own server.
Again,
I know there's the other method to do it, but we need institutions. If 230 goes down, we need institutions to stand behind these servers. You know, I'm sure it worries you. There's a liability here. And we need places that have lawyers to worry about some of this stuff.
I think a lot of that stuff goes away when you decentralize. I think it's easy to shut down Twitter. It is virtually impossible to shut down the Fediverse.
But it's not impossible to come sue you and make your life miserable.
So I move it offshore.
With takedowns and, well, maybe. So go, but go ahead and show people how to.
I can move it offshore. So the first thing I want to show you is, yeah, you probably already know this, but you go to your. I'm using the advanced Mastodon interface, so this might look a little different from yours. You can turn that on.
Hashtag, mine is so much nicer with light mode, by the way.
You can make it light if you want. So hashtag nice. Black. I'm going to hit return. And this is going to give me some hashtags with the word black, including black Mastodon. I click on it. Now I have a column that has the of posts with black Mastodon. That's going to be your starting point. I'm going to pin that. And I'm going to move that over so it's a little higher.
It's better in your view.
Up here. And now I have this column. This is much like TweetDeck of black Mastodon. So I'll hide that interface. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say you're going to keep this forever. But what you're going to do is you're going to see who's posting here. You're going to see what some of the other tags are. And let's see. Oh, pursue Black Joy. I like that. I'm going to follow him. It's not going to take you long. In fact, it's going to take you less time here than it would have taken you on Twitter.
I'm not saying, Leo, I'm not saying there aren't black people on Mastodon. I'm saying that there was a culture that was built up on Twitter that is not easily transported, and I don't think we should dismiss it just because it came on Twitter.
I don't see why it's not easily transported, but I'm not going to speak to that. I think that the Jurna.host actually transported them over, but I think they also are still thinking in that it's unfortunate because Twitter brain is a little bit of a messed up mind. So if you go to your Jeff Jarvis here, right? This is your profile.
Which I didn't put the stuff on my...
You haven't verified these. So what you need to do is verify these. You self-verify by adding web standard rel.me tag.
Rel.me.
To your Buzz Machine blog, to your Medium post. This is easy to do. You can even do it on Twitter. You certainly can do it at CUNY. You will then convert these into verified. Let me show you my profile so you can see what it looks like once it's verified. So this is my blog, so it's green check. So what this tells you is that I control this blog enough to add this account to it, self-verification, and it's actually a better system than the Twitter blue check.
Yeah, but I think community verification, I would love community verification because Mastodon is all about the instances, right? It's all about the servers that form the federation, and at some level you can ignore that if your interest is in having a global presence. You don't actually need to worry about the instance except that
you get both. I mean, the instance is great. Both, you should sign up for if there were a Flong instance, I would say you go there.
Yeah. Although we can get into this. There's an issue with you can only have one identity that people can follow. If you want to have many identities, they have to follow each of them from each instance.
Well,
there's no federated identity.
Right. You decide what you want, but you could have four identities with the four different persona.
But then at a global level, I have to pick one of those. So I'm actually at twit.social. Thank you for running it. I signed up in April because I was like, hey, Leo's on this. Let's see what it's about. So that's where I'm at. Now, but if I want to be on four instances, I mean, I think it gets into like, how much is this like Discord or Slack versus Twitter or Facebook?
I would say it's more like Discord in that regard.
Except it's one, right? Each instance is federation. Like a channel.
Right. Yeah,
each instance is like a channel. So at some point, I won't be surprised if someone creates a concept of federated IDs. So you register on one instance and you can link these. So IDs you have in other instances. And then the instances become like channels.
You could do that with a verification as well. You could have in any profile. Verified extra profiles.
Right. But I think it's the idea is like this is part of the evolution is how much is this its own beast, which it is right now, that resembles in some way other microblogging services like Twitter. But the verification thing, this is where I want to support Jeff on this because I think it's one thing if you said, oh, we're going to have a central authority run at mastodon.social that is going to verify people. I don't think anybody wants that. But I love self-verification because I'm used to that from a keybase.io, for instance.
Right.
Been doing
you could have your keybase.
For years.
Yeah, I'm using KeyOxide, which is a successor to Keybase. But this is great.
But I think there's a place because it's federated for having a federated authority where you choose what authority you accept. And if somebody wants to figure out, I know a lot of reporters, and this happened to me too. When I was verified, there's no value to me for being verified except when I DM somebody, they're like, aha, there's a mark of approval that means that somebody took a look at this guy. So if I were verified on, let's say I register at Jurna.host and I get verified by them on that one instance in some particular way. If I reach out to a source, they have a way of saying this group, and I can choose whether to accept their authority or not, has done some outside work. It's kind of like an SSL or TLS certificate. If you go someplace and there's a green check mark or whatever the symbol is on your browser that shows that a site is secure and it's got a certain level of validation, you're making the assumption that some outside party has done this closed loop, but it's totally distributed. There's all these certificate authorities. There's millions and millions, billions of websites. There's no centralized authority that says, hey, we're the only people who can validate a website. By the same token, I want every instance to have its ability to validate users if they choose, and different standards, because that's, again, that's
a joint federation. You have industry organizations. You could say, exactly. MCSE or...
Right. And I'm talking to one of those organizations now to take over what Adam's doing. We just get him going. And then, I'm going to make up an organization, the American Journalism Union.
And how would you how would you show that?
I mean, it could be a link on the website.
The name of this instance, that's all.
Yeah, I mean, it could be.
But I mean, how would I verify, Jeff, that you are a member of the
National? There's someone there. Well, there is someone there who's going to verify. Adam's doing that right now. Adam's saying that.
So I don't see how that in any way.
You've got to show us three articles.
I don't. Yeah, that's so stupid. All you have to do is link to Buzz Machine, and then you have verified that this is
who the hell knows what Buzz Machine is?
Yeah,
this is an organization that says these are journalists, as opposed to
pink
slime people. Pink slime. Hey, you can come in and be pink slime. You can create the Denver Guardian. C-2016, and you can say, look, I've got a publication, I'm a journalist, and I verified linking to the Denver Guardian. That's worthless. It's worse than worthless. It brings down the credibility of everything.
Tell me how you tell Adam that you're a journalist. You give him three tear sheets, right? This is how you would tell Mastodon. You would link back to those three things and then have those three things verify you are who you say you are.
That's
superior than you sending Adam three tear sheets and then Adam does something that somebody else has to trust Adam to trust you. You're nuts. You guys have centralized brain, and I'm just going to say this. Let it go. Because
it's not centralized, I believe in the power.
You want an industry standard.
No. I want every instance to be able to set its own terms for this. And so I don't.
Well, nobody's going to stop
every
that.
Just because you're on Journal Host
doesn't tell me that you're an official journalist.
You can judge it as you wish. That's the point of federation. You can ignore it.
Well, good for you. It's masturbatory. There is a real verification system that's not. If you guys want to do that, no, I certainly think it's fine. I think you're mistaken in thinking that the system that exists isn't more than adequate. It really is.
Oh, I 100% disagree with you. The system that exists is a technical thing. It only works for a subset of people who have access to the head tags on their page and have the technical ability to deal with it.
You don't belong to that place, then, if you can't have a rel.me there.
No, I don't.
Well,
think,
then that's exclusionary.
That leaves out so many people. It's 99.9% of people.
Right. Well, I mean, I'll say this.
That's you being too geeky, Leo. No, that's you insisting on a geek hierarchy.
Well, Queen Pruitt, Jeff,
queenpruitt.com, but I can guarantee you she has no idea how to put in the rel tag.
Right.
Well, I'll show you because it's actually pretty easy. They even tell you when you want to verify a Mastodon, you click a link.
For you
and they say, no, wait a minute. They click a link and they say, see this, copy this, paste it into your website, you're done.
Yeah, but you have to have access to the head tags too.
It doesn't have to be an head tag, it could be anywhere.
I saw somebody who tried five times, their people are confused. You're doing geek snobbery here.
Yeah, domains are
now it is August, September.
Welcome to the modern world. That's all, you know. Let me ask you, Ant, do you feel like there is a culture on Mastodon that's welcoming to people of color?
Yeah, definitely do. But the bigger story that I'm seeing with this is it reminds me of all of the family and friends, quote unquote friends, that are on the Facebook platform. Just because there are some good people on that Facebook platform that can't quite seem to leave that and go to Twitter. Because it just there's a disconnect between Twitter and Facebook far as they're concerned. They just don't quite get it. And so when I say the same thing to the folks that are on Twitter, my community on Twitter, about Mastodon and finding an instance or joining twit.social, everybody's eyes just sort of glaze over like, what? It just doesn't click.
The thing is, signing up at a Mastodon server is exactly like signing up at Twitter. The thing that's hard for people to get is that there isn't one Mastodon.
It's not just one, right?
And there is one Twitter. And what I'm saying is, people have this centralized notion that everything has to be centralized. Is part of the problem
Yeah.
And because Twitter was centralized, now this guy Elon Musk gets to decide. Look what Twitter did with checks this morning.
Could not agree.
Marques Brownlee tweets, oh, great. There are now two verified checks, one that shows next to your profile, the blue, the old blue check, and retweets and everywhere. It means you're a Twitter blue subscriber. The other one, official, shows up on certain profiles because you're official. To which Elon says, Elon says, oh, no, never mind, and cancels it.
Killed it. Yeah.
He literally was there for an hour because Elon, in his infinite wisdom, said no.
It's great. The machine, you know, there's a great E.M. Forster story that was ahead of its time called The Machine Stops. It's an incredible account of everyone becoming dependent on machines and living underground because the earth becomes too polluted and everyone lives individually and they communicate through wall screens. I mean, it's a story. It was written 120 years ago, 130 years ago. It's ridiculous how much it seemed like the pandemic period, among other things. But I feel like we're in that stage where things start breaking down at Twitter already. I was trying to post images on a tweet today and Twitter split it into two messages. One was the tweet and one was the tweet with the images. People are saying direct messages are becoming public and we're watching the machine stop.
Yeah, this is an article by a former Twitter engineer. You put this in, Jeff. Let me see if I can find it.
Is this the one
who says
September 1?
It's about to fall apart.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, it is.
This is from MIT's Technology Review. Chris Stokelwalter. Walker.
Great reporter, Chris, by the way. That's my verification. Chris Stokelwalker,
great reporter. But what Chris could do is go to Mastodon, put a link rel.me in his bio.
On a Wired page? Right.
Well, what if he's a freelancer who works only once for this publication?
He writes for technology.
And they don't really want him to do that.
So you think it's better that he then goes to, who's this guy?
A trade. But Jeff's point is, look, I'm going to argue this point with you, Jeff, because it's we're going to do a tag team wrestling thing. I don't think Ann, are you going to tag in with Leo? But it's, I believe in the power of independent trade organizations that help people develop credibility apart from what they work for, if they work for somebody. As a freelancer, it's very hard to develop credibility. And Chris is a fellow freelancer. So, you know, if I want to prove I'm a journalist and I write for 15 different publications, I want a centralized but not centrally owned organization. I want a American Journalists Association of America or whomever to have the ability to say Glenn is in our directory. And if that shows up as a Mastodon style verification,
that's like how you would do
profile,
it. You,
to a profile,
that's how they would
great.
Do it. Yeah.
If instances develop a different mechanism that is a different kind of thing and it only offers a badge for people on that instance and other instances may not even show it, I think that's okay too because it's federated.
I am, and I understand it's complicated for people, but I am a big fan of open indie web, open web, and micro formats. Yeah. And this is a micro formats thing. It's been around for at least a decade, maybe two, the rel.me tag. And honestly, this is the way to do it so that no company, no capitalist, nobody can control it. It is grassroots, and yet it's well thought out to provide rock solid verification. Now,
if you have a site,
when I register,
your journalist organization, Association of Independent Freelance Journalists could do it too. You could say member IFGBC33,
and then it would have
a green check because they, in their directory, put rel.me next to your name.
All right. We have a meeting of minds. I think we're good. I promise not to register IamLeoLaporte.com and verify it on Mastodon.
You could, but then somebody who was wondering, is that the Leo Laporte, might go to Twit and say, oh, no, he isn't the real Leo Laporte. Or go to the Association of Independent Podcasters or whatever. Fakatka. See, part of my reason I don't buy this is because podcasters have been trying to do this forever. There's like 15 different lame organizations for podcasters.
Let me be very clear.
They have a new Hall of Fame awards every 3 years. There's a new one.
Different hall. I hate certification of journalists. I'm early on, I'm the guy who said anybody could commit an act of journalism. I don't want official certification of journalism.
I don't want
bloggers to have certification. I'm fine with that. But there are a lot of people who don't do what I do and don't have the abilities that I have. And I have my own blog, and I have a university, and I have these other things I can do. There's a lot of people who don't have those things.
Okay, I agree. If you have no digital presence, then it's hard to use Rel.me. If you have no, you don't exist in the digital world, then you can't use Rel.me.
Well, if you don't control your digital presence, which is what freelancers.
Well, I would submit that you should find a way to control your digital presence. You can by the way, you can Rel.me.
This may be a way to do it.
You can Rel.me to your Twitter, by the way. A lot of people do that.
I know. But that still doesn't tell that if somebody wants to say so we teach media literacy, and I also think that's BS, but we'll stay with it for a second. Media literacy is know the source you're talking to. Who is it you're talking to? How did you find out who this person knows what they are, kids or grandpa online? Right. Well, they write for The Washington Post. To some people that works. That's fine. Some people that means that they're full of crap. They're on Fox News. Same kind of difference. Right. You're giving people some basis for their decisions about the credibility when it comes to journalism. Now, again, I don't want to restrict journalism. I don't want to limit it. But what Glenn's been saying is right. If there are various options for people, so you just described it,
well,
Leo.
There are.
If you do the rel.me to this server, then fine. We agree.
There are. But I think it's a mistake to look for some centralized authority.
No, we're not.
To give
it's
you
an
a
option.
Blue check.
It's one of many options.
Look what Elon just did.
Decentralized authorities.
Yeah, decentralized is really much better.
Yes, decentralized, exactly.
Okay. Well, I think we're on the same
I
think we're on the same page.
But there are a lot of Twitter brains who say, well, if there's no central authority.
We're not saying that.
Yeah,
we
good.
We're not saying that.
Good. So let's be very
not saying that. This is an option, one of many.
Yeah.
I work for the Washington Post. That's one.
It could be a trade organization. It could be the
That's what we're doing.
The Association of Police Authorities.
But they were too slow. And so Adam stepped in and said, I'm going to create this so people get involved
in this. Well, I think that's where I think is a mistake because.
But he's one server, though. He's not going to be for everybody. He's not going to be the journalist.
But you can see he's already having trouble because, unfortunately, journo.horst is being blocked by a lot of Mastodon instances because the people on there, some Mastodon instances have decided are sensationalist or tabloid and have blocked the entire instance.
Which is their loss. They can. Yep. Is there right? And they're lost.
Is it? Did Adam not understand the culture he was entering, and stumbled in and did the wrong thing?
Eugen himself said today, "No one should block you. There's no reason to block you." He responded personally.
Doesn't matter. There's no central authority. No. Authority. What? This is your Twitter brain.
Well, but he can disagree with you. What I'm saying is, you're not the central authority either.
No.
This is a democracy, Leo.
Yeah, but Eugen does not decide. That what Adam did was right. You know who decides? All the Mastodon.
Yes, fine, and they have the right
who don't
to
federate with him.
And so some people want to come.
Well, broke what he wanted to do. It got the wrong effect. That's the only way to judge this.
Say some people, but this is like the early days of the net and the longest September. The endless September? Whatever the September was.
You don't have to.
It
was an unforced error.
It changed.
He didn't have to make this mistake if he had understood the culture he was barging into.
I want to derail this slightly because I think there isn't a great example of something that works. I mean, I was mentioning SSL certificates I'm old, so it's actually TLS certificates now for the last many years.
Oh boy.
But DNS, domain naming system, dates back to, I've lost track. It's like 50 years old, 45 years old, something like that. It's an amazing, robust system that's made of chewing gum and baling wire, and it's kind of like a 7 Rube Goldberg machine stapled together, and yet it stayed together in an incredible mix of decentralization and centralization. There are some authorities that run parts of it to make sure it works, and others that are totally, they could all be enemies of each other, but everyone agrees that the power of being able to resolve a human readable domain name and other technical stuff into an address on the internet is so important that it overcomes many of the issues that have to do with giving up, ceding a little bit of your authority. I like to come back to anarcho-syndicalism, right? It's a great political structure in which everyone's running their own anarchy. They have their own rules. There may be no rules, whatever, but you syndicate together, you federate, and you agree that we have these interoperable rules. And so nobody tells anybody else precisely what to do. But because of that, everyone has to agree together. And the internet is partly anarcho-syndicate, but DNS really is. There's really nobody except at a very top, very technical layer that kind of says, here's where things point to. And occasionally third parties have said, we don't believe in DNS. It's run too dictatorially. We're going to break off and form alternate DNS or form systems that are outside of the power, the hegemony of the United States that's led this or different international groups. And they failed because the power of anarchy is agreeing to a set of rules that generally work pretty well has proven out to win. And so I kind of hope that's where Mastodon wins out, is that you have lots of different approaches and whatever wins mm-hmm. is going to be the one. Maybe here, let me postulate this to both of you two, is that maybe Adam did make a mistake. Maybe journal.host was a bad idea and journalists should have all bugged out, you know, talking about MASH earlier, they should have all bugged out and joined all kinds of different servers and not collected into one place, because being at one place is provides a single point of people being angry at journalism or angry at a specific journalist. Maybe it was a bad idea, or maybe it was a great idea. And in 2 years, there's 50,000 journalists there and everyone agrees this is the most credible place to be. And everyone has a RelMe tag pointing to journal.host if they're a journalist. So we won't know how it shakes out. But what I love is we all get to experiment and figure this out in real time with, to Leo's point, nobody gets to say this is a bad idea and shut it down. Everybody.
And to me, this is the real moral of what's happening, is if for the first time in my living memory, finally, people have gotten fed up with this idea of siloed corporate-owned media on the internet world. And for the first time ever, a decentralized, open system has started to win over a centralized system. And to me, that's a huge victory. Yes. And so that's why I want to defend the culture of Mastodon. By the way, you don't have to be on Mastodon to be in the Fediverse. Mm-hmm. You could, it's just ActivityPub. You could have your own personal microblog do it. You could have any way you want to do it. And I do think journal.host is going to be fine. And so he had the right idea. He didn't do it diplomatically enough. And the people who are blocking him are also not understanding that you don't have to block the entire server. You block the individuals. I can block any individual.
You don't have to. If you follow no one there, that's all.
You know that Howard Stern's on journal.host, but I don't want him on mine. I just can block him, and no one on my instance can follow him or even see what he's posting. So you have a granular control of that.
Individuals, that is the one thing individuals
can do it too. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
That is one of the things I do like about this versus Twitter, where I can literally just block an entire instance because I make the decision to say that instance is just going to be.
You can do it for yourself. Exactly.
And it's this more curation in my hands.
And you mentioned Eugene, who is our Gargron, who is actually Eugene Rotko, who's a German programmer who wrote Mastodon some years ago. But we really should emphasize Mastodon is using ActivityPub. So does Pleroma. So does PixelFed. So do many, many microblogs. So many other things use it. And it's the real secret is ActivityPub here. It is a micro format. It is a protocol that is open.
When did it start?
Oh, it's at least 10 years old.
That's where I'd understand when Blue Sky started. It felt like another attempt to have sort of a centralized, decentralized thing that it was like, well, we weren't involved in this and Blue Sky doesn't interoperate with ActivityPub, right?
No, in fact, we had this conversation with Rabble a few weeks ago who was doing Scuttlebutt, which is also not ActivityPub. And I said, why don't you use ActivityPub? And he had some reasonable technical issues, chief of which Scuttlebutt gives you a unique certificate-based identity that is portable.
This
is the big problem with Mastodon. You, in fact, in a way, described this. If I had a unique identity, I could have three Mastodon accounts, but they were all tied to a unique identity. If I wanted to move servers, I could move the whole thing just by moving this certificate. So that is something I think Mastodon could have done better, and it still could. Maybe it's a limited.
Or is it ActivityPub? That's the question.
I think it's at the Mastodon level, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I would love that as a thing. Is like something like, again, this is the choice factor too. Is public key cryptography is so well distributed around into all kinds of things that we use, a trillion times a day across all sorts of different software. But then it's exposed in things like Keybase.io, and I'm sorry, the one that you use. I didn't catch the name of the for registering your digital certificates and your personal digital stuff.
I forgot too. there's a couple now. Keys.pub is former Keybase guys. Yeah. And the one
and I love that.
Yeah. The one I use is I don't see this is part of the problem is that these things don't last. So
Keybase got bought by somebody.
Zoom bought the team. They didn't buy Keybase. Yeah, that's right. And that's still, part of the problem. So I use KeyOxide, which actually I kind of like.
But it's a way of providing, you know, that's where if I need to find a public key or
you see my keys, but also verify this is the same
across many. Yeah.
Using a similar technique to rel.me. So if you believe this is me, which you can do based on the fact that all of these things are owned by me.
What is this again? Because
KeyOxide.org.
Well, see, it solves a problem. And there's that whole thing. I don't know. I feel like I've been having to mess with public keys, since twice the age of my children, right? Since like the 1990s, it feels like Philip Zimmerman came up with the pretty good protocol, right, for PGP. And the big problem all along was there were key servers, but key servers were 100% unreliable. They're expiration issues. So it's like, if I need to send you, Ant, a message that's signed with a key that you've publicly posted. What if the key is expired? What if it's been compromised? What if it's not Ant? So this is Keybase, at least, and some of these other servers have been trying to settle that problem. So I think it got solved in one level. If you have end-to-end encryption, instant messaging clients like iMessage and WhatsApp, if you're not doing cloud archiving, then they're and Skype even like they're dealing with key management for you, so you don't need to know someone else's keys.
Unfortunately, they're always tied to your phone number, which is problematic.
Or something, or a device too, like with Apple ties. But then you're locked in there. So I like the idea of independently held keys, and management is an issue. But so these sites like Keybase let you take a key, register it, only publish the public part, but then validate that it's you by using all kinds of other things that like a cluster of stuff that together forms your online identity. And they're all using the same kind of code, a code that you're the only one who should be able to post to all those different places like GitHub and Twitter and Facebook and websites and so forth. So someone goes to Keybase and says, oh, this really is Glenn and I can trust this public key, or I can use this account because I see a cluster of validated stuff and a cryptographic component. Mastodon could tie into something like that
Well, again, it doesn't need to
behind it.
Because I verified through KeyOxide. I think for your purposes, KeyOxide is probably easier than Keys.pub. Keys.pub was started by a former Keybaser, but I think it's a little bit obscure. I understand I'm not going to recommend it. This one's a little easier. You just go to KeyOxide. Show this, please. You go to KeyOxide, and you could see it has a Mastodon key, and there's the checkbox. It's pretty easy to create a key.
And I just started looking at the doc for them.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you thought rel.me was too hard for people, this is 100 times worse.
This is why I'm a big fan of, the web authentication, WebAuthn, that's become very popular. Mm-hmm. It's FIDO2 is like the friendly name for it, I think, sort of. And I love it because passkeys is the friendly name, right? Yeah. So I love passkeys because passkeys package all the complexity and utility of public key cryptography inside something you as an individual don't have to manage. Like I'd be comfortable teaching someone to use a passkey because literally it's a fingerprint that they can authorize something with. The enrollment process is trivial, where something like Keybase or KeyOxide or KeyPass are all dramatically more complicated. They're meant for a more technical audience, but you could use passkeys. I just like the sense that there's a way to cryptographically prove your identity beyond just a link, but then to be able to federate all these different elements of yourself online into something that then proves that, the public identity you're using is accurate.
This is kind of one of the central problems of the internet. It's certainly a central problem of payment systems is authentication. And people are very reluctant to have a, universal driver's license or a federal ID, which I understand. It seems like the internet should facilitate this kind of thing, but right now it's still pretty geeky. I'd be curious, Ant, set it up and see how it works for you. I have a KeyOxide signature on many of my sites and on my Mastodon. So if you click that link on Mastodon, you would then go to KeyOxide. It's very hard to spoof that because whoever was pretending to be me would have to have control of all of my sites, including Twit. So it's very hard to spoof that. So it's a good system. But I have a lot of sites, right? So You're right.
Right.
You know, Queen Pruitt, she has one site, but if you can show her how to use that site to verify her identity, that's a big step towards putting yourself on the net in a way that's provably you. And I think that's turns out to be, just as we were saying, Glenn, you were saying, very, very important. I want to give credit to Evan Prodromou because he kind of started this right at when Twitter started. Just a year later, he started Identica. We had an Identica server at Twit, the Twit Army server, some folks will remember.
I remember that.
Yeah, that morphed into GNU Social, which is, these are all ActivityPub, kind of early ActivityPub precursors. Evan's one of the authors of ActivityPub, along with Christine Leber Weber, who some people will know, and some really well-known people. This is a W3C approved protocol. So honestly, I think this is a good way going forward to create these kinds of de-siloed social networks. One of the reasons I think Mastodon and I think Discord too are very powerful is because they're small and local. And a lot of people who came onto twit.social said, oh, this is like what Twitter was in 2008. You know, it felt that way, right?
Like, and it's so quiet.
Friendly and quiet. Yeah.
And I got to ask you a question because I know you're the youngest person here. Is were you on BBSs as a kid or was that before your time? The dial up BBSs?
That's before my time.
See, at Mastodon to me at some level, I mean, it's grown so fast. It's like when I joined, like when I started using it seriously 10 days ago or 8 days ago, right? That's when I was serious about it. It was sort of like BBSs. You had a bunch of tin cans and you're holding them up to your ear and they're all kind of dialing each other up and it's kind of slow and you're talking to other nerds and there's not a lot of conversation. It's all kind of a certain topics. And then it went through. It was like watching sped up evolution. And it's like, do we don't want it to become Twitter? Because Twitter has so many problems, but we also want to have a global tin can of some kind. We just don't want the tin can to cut us. I don't know. That's I'm losing my metaphor. Help.
I ran a FidoNet in the mid-90s, BBS.
That's great.
And one of the things that FidoNet did and was intended to do was federate. So you had it was very much Mastodon. You had a local instance you were part of, a local community that was small, but you could follow anybody on any other Fido community. Worked really well. And I think that is the best of both worlds. By the way, already the verified blue check is becoming a massive problem on Twitter. Libs of TikTok have purchased a blue check. So that, and some people will recognize
the name. It's worse than worthless now. It is the blue check of the schmuck.
It's anybody with $8.
Yeah, that's all it is.
And so the problem is this is now meaning, I mean, they've destroyed their authentication system.
When we talked about this last week, are we being unfair to assume that no one on the new Twitter leadership staff understands what verification means?
Well, I think the problem is that Elon doesn't. I think there are people, quite a few people in this so-called inner circle. There are a couple of ex-Twitter people, including the head of product, Bea Kapoor, who's back, at least advising
Elon. Right. Saw that.
I would expect that they would be saying, hey, Elon, you know, you don't want to break this system.
Right now, the blue check is coming off as a receipt and not necessarily.
It's a receipt. Thank you. That's a very good way to put it.
Oh, that's really well said. Yeah.
And what's sad is, I mean, I have a blue check from the old days. I guess now that I don't pay Twitter the $8, I guess I'll lose it at some point.
Well, I got a notification today, Leo.
Did you?
That at my next billing, they're going to kill my account. Oh. There's no, like, oh, gee, do you want to convert, Jeff? No.
They're going to, wait a minute, they're going to kill your Twitter account?
I put it, No.
Twitter
my blue check.
Yeah,
my Twitter blue.
Wait.
They're going to kill my Twitter blue.
Or your
rather
check,
than converting me.
Oh, you have to sign up again, in other words.
So I
like
put it up
in Costello routine.
That's not a good system. Just take the, well, this is, again, because he fired a lot of the engineers. And, of course, the latest rumor is that he's asked a few of them to come back.
But let me go. Just a Boolean flag on the table somewhere, right?
Right. No, it's a bit. It's literally just a bit.
I just want to point out that, you know, nobody disagrees with. I think I don't think I'm taking a legal stance when I say it's pretty clear that Twitter's firings violated California and possibly federal law. I do love that the penalty is that you have to pay people essentially what you'd pay if you gave them layoff notice. So Twitter seems to be poised to do that. So
they're going to give them 3 months I don't work here, but I'm getting a check money.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what that means is that you're
like
still
Silicon
working.
Valley and Hooli.
Yeah. They can recall you though, because you're still, you're laid off, I think. So there have been reports. So now so there have been reports of this, and I haven't seen it like verified by
That's
people on the record.
Fascinating.
That some people who've been recalled have said, I'm not coming back. And they said, great. If you don't want to come back,
You're quitting.
Not going to get the extra stuff.
Yeah, you're quitting.
They'll get the severance, but they won't get the additional thing. So if you're recalled.
So somebody thought through that.
Yeah, I know. Weird, huh?
Well, he thought through that after somebody said, Elon, there's this thing called the WARN Act, and you're in violation of it. And it is, by the way, it's very expensive. I think it's $500 a day per violation. You better do something else.
I'll bet the letters to the employees didn't say that.
No,
I'll
no.
just bet.
Yeah. Can I contrast this, by the way, in a very sad day? It is a sad day for everybody who lost their job at Twitter. Now, 11,000 Meta employees are going to lose their job. But can I contrast the way Elon handled it with the way Mark handled it? Because I think
his letter is pretty amazing.
We've given Mark a lot of, hard times over the past few years, but I was very impressed. This letter, he takes full responsibility. He acknowledges how hard this is. He says, how do we get here? I thought this was very graceful. At the start of COVID, the world rapidly moved online and the surge of e-commerce led to outsized revenue growth. Many people predicted this would be a permanent acceleration that would continue even after the pandemic ended. I did too. Not we, I did too. So I made the decision to significantly increase our investments. Unfortunately, this did not play out the way I expected. I got this wrong, and I take responsibility for that. Now, that doesn't
take
a lot of the sting out of getting fired, but very good severance packages. 16 weeks base pay plus
2 weeks per year.
Yep. They're going to give you 6 months of health insurance. They're going to help people find work.
Oh,
it's pretty generous.
That's good.
It's as good as it can be. Look, layoffs happen.
Yeah.
We've had to do layoffs. I think he's not alone. I think almost every tech company foolishly perhaps thought that the expansion that we saw during COVID, which was very good for tech, added trillions of dollars to the bottom line. was you have to hire, right? You have to.
But this is the good part for people who took those jobs, though, is they hired a lot of people. They paid a lot of people very high salaries, not everybody. And almost everybody who's hired at these various companies got stock and options and, restricted stock units and so forth. So if you got a job during that period, you got 2 years of ostensibly pretty good pay. It felt very reliable. You were doing something that you felt was interesting, and maybe you got hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars worth of stock, honestly, because of the run up. So it's a different position than say 2008. Not if you work for Tesla or Facebook.
Facebook stock is not worth the paper it's written on, unfortunately.
Right. All the people at Twitter got paid out at 54.20, right?
Well, so they're all happy. There was, I don't know. Again, it's hard to know what really happened, but there was, of course, this. Story that Elon was going to say you were fired for cause, so you don't get your golden handcuffs. Parag and others, very much in contrast, Zuckerberg in his letter says everyone impacted will get their November 15th stock grants and will vest November 15th, even though we're going to let you go before then. That's exactly the opposite. Now, look, it's horrible. There's 11,000 good people who are out of work, and I feel for them. And I feel for the 3,000 Twitterers who, I mean, I'm sure all of these people loved their job, or most of them, and are hurt. It's a very hurtful thing to lose your job. I understand that. But boy, this is a real contrast the way
What a contrast. Yeah. What a contrast. Yeah. Yes.
I think
Nick Clegg probably had some role in that because I think he's smart at communications.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good communication. Yeah.
And had the ability to sit down and say, what does it mean to do this right?
Yeah.
Let's do it that way.
And, Lyft has been, everybody's been laying people off. So this is a grim time right now.
I can be really cruel here and say, well, Nick Clegg has a lot of experience from his political past and making a lot of people really disappointed in taking responsibility for massive errors that he's made. So he's the perfect person for this.
He knows how to make a mistake.
He knows.
With grace and elan.
Oh.
Somewhere I thought I put in the rundown a layoff tracker.
Oh, God. Well, let's not look at that. Let me take a break.
All right, fine.
There's lots more to talk about. Really fun to have you guys. I apologize for my strong language earlier.
There was no
we
strong
play roles. We what play roles.
I wasn't playing a role. I feel defensive about Mastodon because I want open source, decentralized to win. I can see how centralized closed source has hurt us.
Amen.
And I just want it to win so badly. So I want to make sure that people stop, pause, and try to understand this new idea instead of bringing these old habits from the centralized.
But Leo, let me just say one thing.
You want it to work, but it's going to take some work on both sides. It's going to take work from you. It's going to take work from the people that are curious about it.
I agree. In fact, you know, my initially kind of thought, oh, I don't want to let all these people in. I almost closed Twits.social.
I've locked mine down. I've made mine private so I could sort of
that's probably smart.
People.
You know, as an administrator, it's an interesting role. I didn't want the culture that exists is beautiful, but it really is a very gentle culture. Things like content warnings and so forth are very different from the way the fractious, brawling space, the octagon of Twitter. And I kind of wanted to protect our instance, but then I thought, well, it's so good to have these new people. And there is such vitality that's been brought. And the good thing about doing it in with our community, one thing I have done is been very careful about promoting it outside our community. So most of the people are Twit people who have learned about it on Twit. And I think that that's probably...
That's something else I said last week because Mr. Jarvis was going on about it and singing its praises at the same time. I'm like, I get that, but I'm not really interested in meeting a whole lot of other folks. I just want to keep the core that I have. And fortunately, the Twit.social core is part of my job.
It is Twit people. But there's two things here.
Yeah.
One is that, Leo, you're providing a service for people who are entering into the new world. So is Adam and Jurna. There's a lot of Queen Pruitts out there who want to play here but don't want to have to go through an education.
Why do I need three remotes to turn on the TV?
just give me the clicker. I can start to do this. And so I think there's a spirit of service. Which I think is important.
Well, and everybody's doing that. I think though that was Adam an administrator before? Had he been a Mastodon?
No, he'd be the first to say that he's doing it too.
That's part of the problem.
But the thing was, we were getting bombarded by people who, you know, I learned how to do this because of you, and I'm here.
Yeah,
and
he jumped in, and it needed to happen.
How do we get it?
I agree, and it needed to happen. I followed a whole bunch of people at Jurna.host. One of the hardest things, one of the things that Mastodon doesn't do very well, I guess Twitter wasn't all that good at it either, was discovery. And
the Explorer is better than Twitter was, actually. The advantage of Jurna.host/Explorer, folks, is you can see exactly who's on there.
Right, and follow them.
And
it's a little hard to follow people in other instances. It's not as easy as just clicking a follow button.
It's three clicks instead of one.
Yeah,
I will say that.
Yeah. Let me show you how you do that, actually, if somebody is new to this and I noticed, I just noticed that, who is it? I think Robert Reich is on here.
Yeah, he just joined.
Yeah.
Stephen Fry is on here.
Mastodon.
He was asking for help.
Fry actually killed his Twitter account. He's done that. I believe done that before. So there's Reich.
Stephen Fry once replied to my wife on Twitter back in the early days to, answer a question she had about, somebody with rat poison. It was very funny.
But. He's amazing. Man, yes. QI is an amazing show. Anyway, so I'm already following him. But let's unfollow for a moment Robert Reich. Well, this isn't a good example because all I did was click the follow button. Yeah.
Go to Jurna.host.
That's a good idea.
I keep finding that changes depending on which client I'm using and what day. Sometimes it's a click and a follow button, and sometimes I have to do something much more elaborate, and I haven't figured out why, if it's like a federation issue
It is. There's two different things you might get. So let's say I want to follow Alex Boyd, which I do. So I'm going to click follow. Now. Yeah. This is one of two different things you might see. So here I'm going to see my name at twit.social. Fill that in. And because I'm logged in, there's a token on this browser. It's just that. So that's pretty easy.
Okay.
That's pretty easy, right. But it isn't, you're right. It's not, let me see.
And by the way, it doesn't tell you now that you're following him there because the journal.host doesn't know that you're following him.
No, but it says here, right. Success, you are following.
I don't know, but back, if you go through the list, I've already followed a lot of these folks.
So here I'm seeing Adam himself, not following him. Let's follow him. It's going to be the same, unfortunately. Sometimes what you get is you have to copy.
Paste in your profile.
Copy in his profile name. So I'll show you how you would. You could do that. I'm going to copy his profile name. Go back to my Mastodon. Oh, I know where. I know what's going on. No, I don't know what's going on. What's going on?
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
It's as easy.
Four,
oh, five, somehow six, I've seven, kind of eight. Merged yeah, these together. Let me go back to mine. I'm going to go to twit.social. Oh, I see what I did. I munged my bookmark.
Left, yeah.
Let me go back to my twit.social. Then you just paste that into the search box and hit return. That will give you the same same result, and then you follow just by clicking that.
Hey, the other thing Leo, is that I'm playing with. Go ahead. You go first.
Oh, can I give you some real-time follow-up thing we were already talking about? 20 minutes ago, according to the BBC, Binance has walked away from its FTX.
Oh, let's watch that one. Yeah.
After due diligence of, 16 hours, it would not pursue the deal.
The crypto world is falling apart. We'll talk about that.
Real time.
In just a minute. In real time, absolutely. It's an amazing thing that's going on. We've got a great panel. And all Mastodonistas, but all Twitterers, too, apparently.
Yeah.
Who knew? I'm going to encourage you to do what I've done on your lower third and just put your Mastodon. Glenn Fleischman.
No, I got a book to sell.
He's got a website. Glenn.fun. Yeah, that's right. You know, I told Lisa, I said, I don't want us to promote Twit on Twitter anymore. She said, well, that's too bad. We're going to.
Get him, Lisa.
Yay, Lisa. You want to sleep on the couch? No, it's okay. Well, Jeff Jarvis. At Jeff Jarvis on the Twitter, bit.ly/buygutenberg for the new book, which doesn't come out till next year. So you'll be pre-ordering that's fine. Yeah. And Ant Pruitt, he's the host of Hands-On Photography. And what I will gladly do for you, Ant, what we can do for all of our hosts is add the rel.me to your Twitter profile, your personal page on Twitter. I mean, on Twit. Did I say Twitter? Oh, shoot me now. Just shoot me. I got Twitter brain. We'll put it on your Twit profile. Here
He's
comes
coming
Lisa.
Back, folks.
Lisa, can
He's
I can
back.
I come to bed tonight? Is it okay? Do I have to sleep on the couch?
No, because we're not leaving Twitter.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Tell him, boss. Tell
him. Yay, Lisa. The day will come. You'll regret that, young
Your
lady.
Your house is not a democracy.
No, it's not. Well, she's chief financial officer. She's chief executive officer, and she's chief monetization officer.
All right.
So if we want to keep the lights on, then I better keep this nice person.
Thank you, Miss Lisa.
Yeah, thank you, Miss Lisa. You got to learn to say that. Thank you, Miss Lisa. Hey, I'll tell you one thing. The reason I don't want to sleep on the couch, our sponsor, 8 Sleep. My bed is so cozy. It's so nice. It's so toasty. It's been getting cold. Winter's here in the Northern Hemisphere. Now, for our Australian listeners, it's getting hotter, isn't it, in the Southern Hemisphere? But the beauty about the 8 Sleep pod cover, it takes care of both situations. It is an amazing technology. You can either get it as a mattress. We loved our mattress. So about a year ago, I bought the pod cover. Actually, they have a new pod 3 cover. I'll tell you about that in a second. But we have the pod 2. It's a tech layer that fits onto your mattress. It's like a fitted sheet. The pod dynamically cools and heats, it does both, each side of the bed to maintain optimal sleeping temperature for what you need, even changing it depending on your sleep patterns, the temperature in the room, and things like that. It can get as chilly as 55 degrees Fahrenheit, as hot as 110 degrees Fahrenheit, and it does it all automatically. Now, I have it set so that when I get in bed, it's about, I don't know what it set it at 5, which is right in the middle of the 0 to 10 scale. So I'm guessing it's probably about 98, 99. It's a little warmer than the body temperature. So it feels toasty. I get in. But one of the things is, it turns out, and I think this is just evolutionary biology, because in the cave or wherever we started out, it would be warmer when you went to bed, but then it would cool off over through the night, right? So it turns out if you slowly cool down the bed, you go into deeper sleep. And that's one of the things the 8 Sleep does so well is it increases. I got an extra half hour of deep sleep every night. That's like a 50% increase. That's huge. Consistent good sleep can reduce the likelihood of serious health issues, decrease the risk of heart disease, lower blood pressure, reduce the risk of Alzheimer's, and you wake up great. So it gets cooler. Mine gets cooler. They have a sleep doctor that actually monitors your movements, your heart rate, your breathing, and the room's temperature. It modifies the temperature, cools it off a little bit. You don't even notice. And then, and I love this, I say, it says, when do you want to wake up? I say, I want to wake up at 8. It starts to warm it up again at 8 o'clock. Now, actually, this isn't working too well because I just don't want to get out of bed now because it's so cold. But we don't have to heat the house because the bed keeps us warm. It actually saves us heating expenses. Clinical data shows 8 Sleep users experience up to 34% more deep sleep. That means you feel better. Your hormones are better regulated. Your physical recovery is better. You can wake up. You can see your sleep score. You can see how you've been doing every night. It's just, the only bad thing is you're not going to want to go travel anymore. Because I tell you what, you get to a hotel bed and it's just a cold bed. It's no fun. No fun at all. I love my 8 Sleep. I'm going to push them to do a travel 8 Sleep. I don't know how they would do that, but I would really like that. In fact, I'd probably pick a hotel that had 8 Sleep if they had it. Hotels, take notice. The 8 Sleep, it seems like magic. It's not. If better sleep's on your wish list, look no farther than the Pod 3. They've now doubled the number of sensors, so it's even more accurate. It's comfy. It's cozy. It's the best way to sleep. For a limited time, 8 Sleep is offering you up to $400 off their Sleep Fit Holiday Bundle. That includes my personal favorite, the pod cover. You'll be getting the Pod 3. You go to 8sleep.com/twig to get the exclusive holiday savings. 8sleep.com/twig for $400 off the Sleep Fit Holiday Bundle. 8 Sleep ships to the U.S., Canada, the U.K., select countries in the EU, and yes, Australia. 8sleep.com/twig. Now, this offer ends November 30th. If you're listening after that date, still go to 8sleep.com/twig. Check out the pod cover. There are other holiday savings, and you will save $150 at checkout. That's the usual offer. So we got a special offer right now through November 30th. This would be a great time. And I can tell you this is a great holiday gift. Lisa sleeps differently than me. She likes hers really warm. In fact, sometimes I'll reach over and it's like, wow, it's really hot over there. She said, yeah, isn't it great? It's so cozy. I just love it. 8sleep.com/twig. Please use that address so they know you heard it on Twig. So among many other crashes in this world today, we now have, I think it's a crypto crash. I think it was last month, Jeff, or a couple of months ago, I was talking about Sam Bankman-Fried and saying, this kid's amazing. You know, came out of Stanford. He's at the time, I think he was worth $6 billion. Not anymore. You may have seen FTX ads during sporting events. They're all over Formula One. They bailed out a number of collapsing crypto exchanges. Sam said, here's some money. Stay solvent. Whew. Now it's not so good. They shut down withdrawals, which implies that they probably couldn't cover it. Sam said they had several billion dollars of withdrawals in just a week as crypto starts to go down. Binance, as you said, was considering bailing FTX out. But the latest, Glenn, they're not going to do it.
Yeah, it happened pretty fast. But is it a surprise? I mean, it's very nice when you're on the Titanic and it's sinking. Or I should say, it's very nice when you're on a bunch of small boats and it's sinking and the Titanic comes by and offers to let you come aboard. But you know where that's going. And that's kind of what was happening with BTX. Like, let's take the lifeboats on board the ship that's going down. It just seems problematic. I mean, I've been reading some stuff today about Sam, and I think he was the friendly face, the happy friendly face, the person who seemed to be doing the right thing, the responsible person in the room, the person pushing regulation, all these things. And so if his exchange, or at least the non-US part of it, I guess, which is the majority, crashes and burns, and that's, I don't know what happens next. And Binance is, I don't want, you know, it's, there's so many specifics you can't get into because you're like, there's so, everything is so fuzzy about them, and they deny things that seem to be true, and they make statements that are hard to verify. You know, the founder there, CZ, likes to say that they don't really exist in any country, so they're not subject to regulation, and yet they have offices in certain countries. So it's, so the two leading exchanges in the world that are essentially establishing liquidity for cryptocurrency, one could be about to completely implode, and the other has chosen now, after saying it would support it, not to. And I've already, you know, we've seen Lehman Brothers discussion has come up quite a lot, but you remember Lehman Brothers didn't go down. It was bailed out, and then global financial system didn't melt down. Well, there's nobody who really wants to pick up the pieces, wants to be left as the last hot potato holder as it cools and freezes.
Sam was the rescuer back in the spring of Robinhood. Robinhood was illiquid. Sam came in, said, here's some money. It bought a 7.6% stake. Now, Robinhood, based on Sam's problems, is crashing. Its shares plummeted 15%. This is funny because this story from the street says, as FTX was acquired to save it from collapsing.
Oh, my gosh.
Now that we know it's not going to be acquired, I wonder what's happening to a lot of...
Can I ask my dumb question of the moment now?
Yes.
So when you give a bank money... they're free to use that while it's there and loan it out to other people. And just as long as they have enough of that money in reserve that when you come to get it, you can get it. And it's preserved by the federal government.
So we don't know have your money, structure. Mr. Potter. We've invested it in Joe there, his farm. And we all learned this in It's a Wonderful Life, Jeff.
So, but now in when it comes to
centralized,
you have a...
banks... have to maintain a percentage
Yes. Right. I'm just setting that up as a setup. We all know this. However, in a cryptocurrency, you own what you own, and nobody else can get access to it except you. So how is it that they can't cover the withdrawals because they don't have access to the currency? I don't get that.
So this is a great distinction I saw made. I think it was Matt Levine in the his excellent Bloomberg newsletter. So I'm quoting somebody from memory here, but it's basically that Coinbase, they have money they hold in trust for you in your wallet. So in the wallets that
they custodial wallet, they call it.
It's custodial. Yeah. And so they have like $100-something billion in assets and $100-something billion in debt or whatever, right? Not debt, but like outstanding money they owe to their people who've invested in or put the money in there, right? So I'm saying that very badly, but it's like it's pretty much balanced, and they make money on fees. Yeah, they make money on fees, commission, you know, fees and going in and out. The whole issue with FTX is that, and a lot of these exchanges, all the exchanges were they take your Bitcoin into them and then they borrow money or buy Bitcoin based on the value of those holdings they have. So when they don't actually possess them or they don't have that direct access to them. So they can't just give them back to you and they can't give you the money for them because, you know, it is that it's in Joe's house and Bill's house. And
I thought this was the whole problem.
Let's let Jimmy Stewart explain it.
I beg of you not to do this thing. If Potter gets a hold of this building and a loan, there'll never be another decent house built in this town. He's already got charge of the bank. He's got the bus line. He got the department stores, and now he's after
us. He's got the Twitter.
Why?
He's got the Facebook.
Well, it's very simple, because we're cutting in on
his business.
He's got
the Tesla.
Why? Because he wants to keep you living in his slums and paying the kind of rent he decides. Joe, you had one of those Potter houses, didn't you? Well, have you forgotten? Have you forgotten what he charged you for that broken-down shack? Here, Ed, you know, you remember last year when things weren't going so well and you couldn't make your payments? Well, you didn't lose your house, did you? You think Potter would have let you keep it? Can't you understand what's happening here? Don't you see what's happening? Potter isn't selling, Potter's buying. And why? Because we're panicky and he's not, that's why. He's picking up some bargain. Now, we can get through this thing, all right? We've got to stick together, though. We've got to have faith
this
in each other.
I'm
going to
give you all blue
Binance
check marks.
And I need money.
How am I going to live until the bank opens?
I got doctor bills to pay. I need cash.
I can't keep my kids on faith. I've got to have...
How much do you need?
Well, I don't know why she has money. Is this Sam Bank Freeman? Anyway, there's the classic run on the bank scene from It's a Wonderful Life. I think it's no longer in public domain, so please don't take us down.
That's a long story.
Doesn't Turner have it now? Somebody has.
Yeah, it turned out the rights did not expire. That's the problem.
Whoops.
They were actually out. But yeah, but it's FTX. FTX is it's leveraging the assets that it holds for other people, just as it would if it were a bank.
Right. So it's more complicated,
and I think this intentionally more complicated because there's also this Alameda, which is the exchange that Sam Bankman-Fried set up,
right?
Which is, I think, holding, but then Alameda collapsed. So Alameda was their, I think, right? Was it their?
Primarily holds the coin, right? There's an FTX coin, and if the coin collapsed in value, then what are they? They can't redeem it against. They can't exchange it for other like values. So they lost. They had to hand out cash to people, and the cash was backed by the value of a thing that declined in its
FTX token, which is FTT. Yeah,
FTT. So it's. I mean, it's kind of like a, you know, it's like a run on, it's like the English pound breaking or something like that. Yeah. It's like a different currency broke and you're like, well, I got to pay out dollars. All I got are pounds, but the pound just broke. So what do I do? You know,
Sam was worth $97 billion in January. He, is well under $1 billion right now.
It's very sad.
It's a lot of money to lose, but the problem partly is, and he always said, let's get regulated. It's not regulated. Although the SEC is now investigating, according to Bloomberg, Sam Bankman-Fried's FTX empire faces U.S. probe into client funds and lending. The SEC and the CFTC will scrutinize the relationship between FTX.com and FTX.
This is the thing. I've been saying this for years, and my late father-in-law spent, I think, about 6 years from like 2002 to 2008 saying the housing market is a bubble and it's going to collapse at any minute, and he was eventually proven absolutely right.
But for years,
people were like, yeah, Steve, right? You know, and he bet against it, and he won. Now, I have no investment in crypto for or against or anything. All my money is in a mattress holdings. They're declining pretty fast right now.
Yeah, but not as fast as. By the way, Bitcoin lost 20% this week. So your mattress holdings are doing better.
Oh, they're looking pretty good. Yeah. But so I've been saying liquidity is the issue all along because there is no actual liquidity. Your liquidity is based on being the bigger or the lesser fool, right? Is that you're hoping the exchanges, because they're not central banks, they cannot have enough money to float the. I mean, when they said that Bitcoin and other currencies were worth what, $3 trillion. Together at the peak, I thought it is an illusory value, not just because it seems too high and there's no intrinsic worth in it, but it's also because you could not liquidate even a tiny percentage of that. And exactly what happened is when there was a run on one small part of the market because of all the cross unregulated leverage that was going on, you did have runs on exchanges and billions of dollars in cash flowed out, things collapsed, and you saw the market shrink, the value, you know, shrink by what, like 60-80% over a matter of weeks. Now we're seeing it drop 20%. The exchanges cannot provide liquidity. There's fewer exchanges. Those exchanges are threatened and they have less and less money. There is no route out where suddenly there's more fiat currency that can be in those exchanges without this massive increase in confidence that isn't going to come with these kinds of
things. This was all leveraged. It was like the mortgage crisis, right? It was a giant pool of money. It was leveraged. And that was supposed to be the promise of cryptocurrency, right? Was that it was a secure thing. We know better, but I'm just saying the arguments made were that you control it and only you have the key. And if you can't remember your password, you're screwed. But, you know, it's still yours.
I confess I made, I think, $100 in crypto in early 2021 when I was writing a book about it. I bought a little bit and then I sold it all. And I was like, oh, damn it, I made money off this. So I had to report it. To pay taxes. So I've made $100 on cryptocurrency
and paid
minus 40%.
40%.
Exactly. It's great investment strategy, Len.
By the way, I was just thinking.
Got me too.
I bet the reason that you have to resubscribe to Twitter Blue, Jeff, I was just thinking, is that they want to take it out of the hands of Apple and Google. They don't want to pay the 30% VIG. So I bet you they're canceling everybody and that the new system will require you go direct through the website. I'm going
to
guess.
By the way, if you want to go to Mike Masnick's Twitter, right now, he's putting in some beautiful examples about how the new blue check is screwing up. There's a bad fake Rudy Giuliani. There's a bad fake Donald Trump.
Yeah, because it's $8.
It's just, anybody, it's $8. So people are coming in. the wits and of Twitter are coming in right off the bat and showing the complete weakness of it. It's hilarious.
It's the same thing that happened with impersonating Elon Musk. It's just, you know, this is the problem, is that people in the internet are very good at gaming whatever you come up with. This killed Dig.com. Poor Kevin Rose was gamed out of business. Poor, I shouldn't say poor.
Yeah, well,
but,
yeah.
Right. But he was gamed out of business because they couldn't figure out how to keep people from gaming it. Gaming the system, and in the intervening 10 years, we've got become masters. So, Elon, you're playing 3D chess with somebody who's playing 18D chess. Sorry,
right?
So let's see, Mike Masnick.
So Donald J. Tweet. Trump, yeah. Blue check. The account name is Real Donuts Trump.
That's the
I
problem.
Decided to do my good friend Elon a favor in return. How badly did you miss me, MAGA?
Oh my God!
Right. And there's another one that goes on about, where is it? Oh, I missed it.
Real Donuts Trump.
Yeah, yeah, look up the Giuliani one.
Let's
got
see.
It down a little lower, I think.
verification.
Yeah, right. Here's there.
Rudy Giuliani Esquire, fake. Blue check, though. All it takes is $8. Nancy Pelosi and I do not agree on many things, but them thangs, thangin', I'll tell you what. I stand with Kyrie Irving and Kanye West because George Soros once pushed me down the street and I was stuck on my back like a turtle for several minutes.
Says Rudy W. Says Giuliani,
Rudy W.
Blue
Giuliani,
check.
Blue check. I am hereby issuing a challenge to Alan Dershowitz, street beefs. Come get some dersh. There can be only one dusty old pedophile attorney around these parts. And on... And wow.
Helen Keller is
and
a
on. I'm not going to read that one.
No,
will I read the one that says I will neither confirm nor deny the reports that I made a big stinky doo doo on Air Force One. All I know is after Roger Stone used a bathroom, would spell Brazzy in there. Talk to me like a man with a mortgage. I don't know what that is.
I don't either.
It's the language of the streets, but clearly Rudy is of the streets. A fake LeBron James tweet verified. Claim the Lakers star was requesting a trade. That could actually have damage, financial damage to LeBron James.
Yeah.
Sure could.
So this is why I want
has fallen in value faster than cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
It fell within hours to zero.
This is really why I want to get us off Twitter. I feel like it's turning into a hellscape. Can he turn it around?
No. But here's the irony. If he listens to Jack, who paid him $1 billion, who saved him $1 billion by keeping his stock. Yeah. If he listens to Jack and federates Twitter through Blue Sky, through what Activity Pub, whatever, and then there are new businesses that rise on top. And then fine, whatever's left of Twitter, you can charge money for it. It won't really matter. You can have it. You can not have it.
Well, I can tell you right now, if he uses Activity Pub to try to add it to the Mastodon Federation, everybody's just going to block it.
Everybody's going
to
block it.
I mean... already you'll get blocked if you do too much cross-posting. I can't imagine that being a...
Yeah.
That's the problem, is that it's not centralized. You can't come with a bag of money to, you know, to Gargron and say, hey, let me in. You can't. It doesn't work that way.
I think in German, would you agree, fellow German person, Glenn, that E-U-G-E-N is pronounced Eugen?
Is he Russian or German?
He's German.
He's German.
Eugen.
Eugen the Rock.
I don't actually know. So this is this is funny thing. This is the Mastodon fella.
Yeah.
Eugen Gargron. One would probably say.
Well, Gargron is his online name.
No, Gargron is his online name. His real name.
Eugen Rachko.
I would say Eugene Rachko.
But that's American.
I would have said Eugene as well.
Eugene Rachko.
It's not spelled with an E. Yeah. Unless he's added it.
But notice the Cyrillic. I think that he might. He says he's German born, but I think his family might have been Russian.
It says Eugeni Ratsko. Oh,
it's Evgeny.
You know, that's interesting.
Yeah.
In Cyrillic, it says Eugeni Ratsko.
Yeah.
It's hard to say that in German.
Ratsko. Well, anyway, good interview with him in Time Magazine. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to read that.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll have to get Mike on soon. Do you agree with James Fallows, Jeff? Twitter is our future, and he doesn't mean in a good way. It is in speeded up time lapse form what's happening to media in general.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting because what he did was he extrapolated back to media, and I think he's right. Jim Fallows is one of my heroes.
Love
him. He's a journalist.
Yeah.
He's just great and a sweet.
He's on Jurna.host, by the way.
He did. He did. Yeah. Yep. And what he's doing is he's saying through Twitter, we can see what media has happened. And I agree with that because, you know, I've argued, and I got into this argument with somebody online on Mastodon too, it was James Glick I got into. So that's the fun thing about Mastodon is I'm already having wonderful conversations.
I know. With people I look at, and look Twitter, who's right? there, James Glick.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
So James Glick and I, where he called and talked about surveillance capitalism. And we're leaving that for. And I said, I'm fine with everything you said. And he liked my post that I did. So I said, I'm fine with everything you said, but I just hate that phrase, surveillance capital, even though I'm now forcing myself to read the damn book.
Shoshana Zuboff's book.
I'm going crazy with it.
Yeah.
But I think it was Jim's point about how we look back at the economy of media. And I talk about this all the time. It's the attention economy that corrupted the internet, that created the centralized internet of data, and everything that Leo, you rail against was media just imported. And when we leave that on Twitter, we also leave that model on media. And I think that we then have to figure out new models. How do you support Adam Davidson and you on the Twitter server and that kind of stuff? It costs you money. What are we going to do about that? How are we going to figure this out? It's a lot, costs a lot less money, but the creativity can be greater. Ant can be on PixelFed sharing photos with us, figuring out other ways to do things. There's wonderful new opportunities that didn't exist before. We can create all kinds of new services that's what I went on about my post, to recommend Glenn Fleischman to you and to authenticate him and to find wonderful things that he says. And there's all kinds of new opportunities here, but it's not the old model, which there you and I agree, Leo.
Yeah.
But it's not just Twitter that goes, it's media.
It's media. Goes. Yeah. Well, actually, as it swirls down the tubes, following it is social media, to be honest.
As a category.
Yeah. Can't say sorry. As a category. Yeah. I mean, look at Mastodon. I mean,
Facebook.
Meta and Meta. Twitter. And
Snapchat.
And what is arising is TikTok and YouTube, is the content creators, which is media. Wait a minute. It's come around full circle.
Careful what you say.
How is it? So how that's media, right? I mean, look, if you were looking at TikTok or watching YouTube,
it's conversation.
You're watching TV. It's not a conversation. You're watching TV. It's a one-way street.
It's one way.
But Mastodon is a conversation.
No, I'm talking about TikTok and YouTube.
TikTok.
And the rise of TikTok is the rise of media.
Yep.
It's but this rise of everybody media. It's the rise of the culture speaks for itself.
I would submit, though, that the problem here is going to be, again, that all these creators are pouring all this effort into something that's owned by a monolith. And you're going to have the same problem ultimately. In fact, already, you know, with people like Paul Carr saying, well, China owns it, so we shouldn't allow it to be in the United States.
Hank Green tried to start the creators union, basically.
Why don't creators do that? Why don't they unionize?
He had to give up on it. You know, Hank announced it at VidCon like 5-6 years ago. I joined it. People joined it. But the problem was he couldn't get the big guys to negotiate with him.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have the power. And, you know, I think you're still going to see Hulu. You're still going to see the big old guys. But I think that the TV, linear TV is going away. Streaming is bigger now than both cable and TV, but YouTube is bigger than streaming when you really get down to it. And I think that that what we're seeing is everyone able to create and collaborate together. And we're still going to have, you know, Star Wars movies. We're still going to have that stuff. We're still going to have blockbusters. But the risk factor to do it is going to go up immensely.
You've said this, even though it often is said, well, you know, video killed the radio star and radio killed newspapers. But nothing ever gets killed. It just gets...
Marshall McLuhan says that the content of the new medium is the old medium.
Right.
In new
rappers.
Exactly.
I look at esports. We were talking about League of Legends had its big Worlds event in San Francisco last week at the Chase Center where the Warriors
played. That keynote was unbelievable.
Fantastic. Thousands
Holy
of
crap.
People... They had Lil Nas X singing the theme song, coming floating up in the hand of a giant mech. I mean, it was incredible. And esports has, in a way, looks very much like the NFL or any sporting event. You've got announcers who are very, very excited.
Seems like soccer to me.
It looks, yeah.
The worldwide reach.
Yeah. You know? It's very interesting.
NFL doesn't have that. Soccer does.
Yeah. But it's
you
still
just
sports.
Wait for pickleball, fella.
I
it's
know.
Gonna take over the world.
It's happening. All right. What else? What else is going on here? Starlink. As long as we're piling on.
I was gonna ask you something. Dang it.
Well, you think about it while I mention this. Yeah. This is a brief story. Starlink. I'm not really having second thoughts about Starlink now. At first, I was not because of Elon. But I was very excited.
Don't buy a Tesla.
I was very excited about the idea of global internet, every corner of the earth with access. And then it turns out, and for that, I personally said, you know what? Okay, it's not great to have 50,000 satellites blocking astronomers, but hey, it's a fair trade because everybody's getting access to the internet. Well, it turns out it's not going to be everybody gets access to the internet. It's anybody who can pay enough for it. And even then now, SpaceX is adding fair use restrictions, just like Hughes had, where if you use more than a terabyte a month, which isn't very much, I use more like 4 terabytes a month because of all the streaming I do. If you use more than a terabyte, they're going to slow you down.
During the daylight hours.
So it's
during
$120 bucks.
It's like 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
They've raised the price from 99 to, I think, 120, maybe it's 110 bucks a month. Yeah, it's 110 bucks a month. It costs you 500 bucks a month for the equipment. This is a rich person's internet. This isn't internet for all.
No.
And the price we're paying is the sky is now filled with Elon's satellites.
Yeah, totally screwing up my Astro.
I've actually completely changed my tune on this thing. It's very disappointing. Of course, unfortunately, it's too late.
Is it sustainable, or are all these just going to decay back into orbit? And
well,
be no
I guess eventually they will.
He's probably going to charge $8 per megabyte or something.
Well, in fact, I saw the head of the FCC at an event. It was off the record. I'm not supposed to say this, but it was a big event. And she was talking, because she says nothing that's not going to be public. She was talking about the requirements. Now, I think after a satellite goes out of service, it can stay up there like 50 years, and they're going to reduce that to like 5 years.
Oh, yeah, they're going to force garbage collection. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. They have to. It's just there's too much crap up there. So do you
Say again? What's the threshold for you? Because $120 is, that's a lot of money. What should that line be?
Well, I don't mind if he charges us wealthy Americans a lot in order to provide access in Africa for $1 a month, right? But he's not.
So have us to subsidize it, basically?
Yeah, but he's not doing that.
He's not doing that.
Even the satellites, even the terminals he put in Ukraine, now he's threatening to turn off if the Pentagon doesn't pay. And in fact, a whole bunch of them were turned off for the Ukrainian military. So Elon
and
said,
"Power that is in his hands, and he's Putin's buddy."
Yeah, he had said on Twitter, "Oh, never mind, I'll pay." First, he says, "Oh, I want the Pentagon to pay for it." Then he said, "Oh, never mind." But then, shortly after that, a whole swath of it was turned off. Just randomly, apparently. So I think unfortunately we've given a madman. Right to put 50,000, whatever it is, 78,000 satellites.
Yeah,
when you say it's affecting your astrophotography, do you see them?
Yeah, you can see them in certain areas, especially the longer you hold that shutter open, you'll see things sort of moving across the sky. Yeah. And like, oh, that's not a star. Yeah. So,
I mean,
I mentioned this before the show, Leo, but at the press conference with Biden, a reporter asked him, I'll just do it again now on the air. Do you think Elon Musk is a threat to national security? And Biden said, and I quote, I think that Elon Musk's cooperation and or technical relationships with other countries is worthy of being looked at. And they kind of tried to ask him to say more. He said, that's what I'm going to say. And somebody came out and said, how are you going to look at it? He said, there are many ways.
Oh, absolutely. Here's the problem. He's got business in China. Mm-hmm. China not only manufactures Teslas, including Teslas purchased in the U.S., but
Apple has business in China too, right?
Yeah, and China's a big market for both Apple and Tesla.
I think it's fair to question Apple related to China. I think it's more. There has been more questioning too. I think when Apple, I think put too many eggs in its Chinese basket, and I know it wanted the revenue there, but and it wanted to reduce costs. But you know, they're already seeing with the COVID shutdowns and everything, and the eventually Xi is going to try to make everything internal and for internal markets. And I think Apple's going to be absolutely pressed to do things it doesn't want to, and it may make more compromises than it has. But
the
but
difference is Apple doesn't own the world's town square.
Yeah, you know, there were concerns. You remember that it was a bunch of issues, like Elon's taking this over just before the midterms, yeah, and it's going to result in misinformation and disinformation and so forth. Fortunately, you feel like he's the Occam's razor would suggest that Elon wanted to disrupt Republicans' ability, the right wing, to message, because he made the service so unusable before midterms. I don't think misinformation
it might have hurt Republicans.
I didn't see any huge stories erupt in the last few days over Twitter, which is what's happened in previous cycles.
Yeah,
you know, Leo, I was at the same conference. I had a conversation with executives from different sectors. And it was a fascinating conversation about deglobalization, that the pressure now on companies to unconnect with China, disconnect with China, is huge, and elsewhere around the world. And it starts to be a really interesting thing that happens here is how do we then shift around these companies, you know, from building supplies companies to electronics companies to magazine companies have huge relationships with China. And if now that becomes not de rigueur anymore and not their growth anymore, it affects a lot of businesses.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to watch.
Let's not forget that Elon also controls a big part of the U.S. space effort.
Well, yep. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we've allowed him to be, I mean, this is the thing that's come up a lot. I think after he finished closed the acquisition of Twitter, is a lot of people independently keep pointing out that Elon's success comes from being in the right place at the right time, which is true, and massive government subsidies. And I've kept joking on Twitter, of course, that if Elon just needs to figure out how to get the government to pay the $8 a month for verification for users, and then he'll be fine, because that's the model he's done with everything else. So SpaceX could be taken over. The ultimate outcome, I was saying for a long time, I didn't think Elon would close in this, because I thought he would wind up preferring to take $1 billion, $2 billion penalty and walk away.
Anybody sensible could have seen this coming.
Yeah, and focus on it, because he's clearly reduced the value of Tesla by hundreds of billions, or all of his companies combined, by hundreds of billions of dollars, put himself personally on the hook. So I didn't think he would really do it in the end. And so watching him do this, I'm thinking, God, is he going to lose control of Tesla? Is he going to lose control of, I don't think he has the same, I looked this up at some point, same, Tesla's stock structure, it does not have the same kind of voting right situation as a lot of tech companies do, and Facebook and so forth. So there is the potential, even though he owns a lot of the company.
He owns 14% now. He sold $4 billion, so he's got 14%, same as the institutionals, and public owns all the rest.
Right. So doesn't he, so he has disproportionate voting rights, but if he gets pushed on, I think Zuckerberg's got Meta structured that it's essentially effectively impossible for him to ever lose voting control.
He has super shares.
But Musk could conceivably have to be forced by margin calls and loan conditions to sell off enough of Tesla. If Tesla stock keeps dropping in price and Twitter's valuation is, you know, substantially below even what he offered, but it's far below probably what it was 2 weeks ago, there's going to be a point in which he could lose control of Tesla, he could lose control of SpaceX, he'd be forced to spin stuff off, he could be forced out of multiple companies. And then you say, you know, well, maybe SpaceX will continue with different ownership or someone will buy him out. Jeff Bezos will come and buy his rival.
So let's go through these scenarios for a second, if we would. There's a Twitter scenario, there's Twitter and Tesla scenario. Twitter scenario is the company can just go bankrupt. It can end up being owned primarily by Saudi princes and such. One scenario says that Tesla would buy it because it reduces their exposure to Twitter stock. another is that that Tesla gets rid of Musk. Says that's your problem, bud. Right? Twitter is going to implode. There's no question. There's no business here. He can't afford the $1 billion in carrying costs. He's destroyed the business. It's going to explode. You already talked about the technology view of that, but from the financial, it's going to. So what are the scenarios? What's the end of this? Where does the story go? Where does it end?
I mean, it'd be great to see if the world's richest man face him comeuppance, but I don't know if we'll actually we'll actually see that.
Sometimes he might be too big to fail, you know?
Yeah, I was digging around here. Musk just sold $4 billion for the Tesla stock the other day.
He said he would not sell anymore. He did.
Yeah, so that was complicated. But he's got, he does have disproportionate ownership and also insiders. So the argument was that not that he has majority voting rights, but it's that it would require a super majority of everybody else at this point to have enough voting shares to override him. However, his ownership could become diluted and banks could make calls. There's just all these things that could happen that could reduce his ownership stake and thus his voting rights and thus put him in that position. But I don't know. I mean, the guy's going to have billion. This is like, remember when WeWork collapsed and you're like, well, I feel bad for poor Adam.
Yeah, no, he did fine.
He wound up with $1 billion.
I think Sam Freeman is the same thing. He's not going to walk away poor.
Yeah. Dang, he's only got $800 million instead of $94 billion. Yeah, right. It's fine, right?
No, not Elon, just that, but that Adam guy is getting more funding from other people after all of his failures.
That's kind of what I mean by too big to fail. It's all like, it's a good old boys network. And
yeah, you fail upwards. You fail up. Fly into space eventually. Fly to Mars on your failures.
Actually, a couple of things apparently may be influenced by Jack Dorsey, Elon's considering. He has apparently applied to... filed paperwork to enter the payments business, according to the New York Times.
Does that compete with Jack, Leo?
I would bet Jack's a partner in this in some way, but I don't know.
Okay.
The thinking is if you're going to make the X app, the everything app, you got to have payments, right? That's one of his plans.
Well, they were just fighting. Just fighting on Twitter. Elon were having a fight.
Oh, good. Elon was on Spaces this morning.
Really?
He spent an hour talking about his plans for the social media service, positioning it as a competitor to more than just classic social networks like Facebook. He says Twitter will make money from content creators and delve deeper into video business segments that TikTok has mastered. I'm reading from the New York Times. He discussed a vision for Twitter, because I did not listen. Well, I couldn't. He discussed a vision for Twitter to process payments complete with connected debit cards and bank accounts. Remember, that's how he started with an online bank called X.com, which he sold to PayPal. He said he hopes to transfer Twitter to the Everything app, model after WeChat. I think, honestly, though, this feels like a lot like, he's running around trying to put out the fire and throwing spaghetti. The rate of evolution of Twitter, this is a quote, will be an immense step change compared to what it has been in the past. You know, if nothing else, I am a technologist, and I can make technology go fast. And that's what you'll see happen at Twitter. He sounds a lot like Donald Trump in his later years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Break things and go fast.
Yeah. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lynette Lopez, which is Lopez Lynette on Twitter, said she covered, she's a columnist on Business Insider. And she said she covered him for 3 years investigating him. And quite a litany of his failures. He put batteries with potential defect of cooling systems in people's cars, and they knew about it. He told engineers to stop doing brake tests because they were finding too many defects, and on and on and on and on. He didn't start Tesla, right? He came in and invested in it because he had the money from the previous company. I worked with his old Yellow Pages company way back when I was at a newspaper. He took that money and he turned it around, but Ant keeps saying he's going to find the right people. He's going to trust the right people. And I think he did that at SpaceX.
Yeah.
He did that to an extent at Tesla, but I think that's limited given this kind of stuff that this reporter has.
That team is landing daggum rocket boosters and we still can't parallel park. He did something right there.
You're right, Ant.
Let me propose a counter example. So let's say he gets payments working. He's giving people who pay $8 the right to post longer videos. He says first 10 minutes, then 42 minutes, eventually hours long. What if he goes to people like Marques Brownlee and says, look, I've got a system for you to monetize on Twitter. You've already got a vast audience, and turns Twitter into a place where creators can post videos, make money. So they put more videos there. I feel like this has been tried many times.
They've been burned by so many places. They've been burned by Facebook.
Periscope. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Periscope? I'm pretty sure MKBHD will say, show me the data.
Yeah. Well, there but there are creators out there who may be young and up and coming creators who will say, well, how much? And Elon says, look, I'm going to guarantee you 50% of everything. Maybe let's make 70% of everything we make. And in return, we'll host it. And you've got your following already on Twitter. This is where he's really got to stop the bleeding. You've got your following already on Twitter. So, you know, he could, let's say he comes to me and says, look, you got 500,000 followers on Twitter. Why don't you post your videos there? We'll sell ads into it. We'll share the revenue with you 50-50.
What do you say?
Well, I'm the wrong person to ask. What? Let's say it says to Lisa.
Lisa, come back.
Yes.
Come back.
Bring her in.
Would like to hear her answer.
Lisa, what would you say around? To that? I don't know. She may be on a call by now, but if she's listening, she'll come running.
She's got work to do, unlike the rest of us.
Yeah, basically, her job is to try to make
Mr. Glenn, you weren't supposed to say that out loud, man.
And gas for hours. Hours and hours. Poor woman. I swear to God.
I'm just paraphrasing Leo.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
Marquez wanted more creator tools on Twitter, the ability to get paid from their subscribers and so forth. So he talks about this on a video, apparently. Didgeridoo in our chat room is saying, I haven't seen that yet. I feel like it's conceivable. He's going to have to scramble. He's going to have to make it happen fast. But before everybody leaves, if he can just say, hey, wait, this is going to be, you know, watch this, and there's some great stuff happening. Feel like, though, Vine, of course, now Vine failed because the creators came to him to Twitter and said, "How you got to give us a share." And Twitter says, no, we're too big.
Share of what? We don't have a share.
You know,
of
but the thing is, you just said before everybody leaves, not everybody's going to leave. Marquez Brownlee is probably not leaving Twitter. He could still have his huge YouTube presence and just have a Twitter supplement.
He'd have to get a better deal though than YouTube's giving him, right?
Right. I'm not saying he's going to sit there and upload his videos to Twitter, but he could still use that feed as a way to send.
Well, no, but Elon wants the video there because he wants people to go to Twitter to watch it so they can monetize them. And then the proposition is we're going to somehow. That's what TikTok says. That's what YouTube says.
Well, go back to BuzzFeed when it started that whole studio.
Yeah.
Go to Casey. What did Casey Neistat? Where did he go? He went for a while and didn't really work out.
He's back on YouTube. Yeah.
But he's back at YouTube.
Yeah.
Right. There have been these stories before.
So it's conceivable. There's. I feel like there. I don't want to write off. It's not impossible that he could find a path to success.
It's
unlikely, probably. But it's going to require discipline on his part. And some real execution, neither of which he's shown.
I'd say it's like the chances of Sarah Palin becoming president.
Don't God knock
help
it.
Us. It could happen.
But Sarah Huckabee is now the governor of Arkansas. So, you know, never say never.
It happened. Yeah, I know. We've been there.
I don't know. I know it's really an interesting. I don't want to write him off. I want to envision some sort of scenario where he could pull it off. But it's a long shot. It really is a long shot.
Well, it's mainly because he's such a loose cannon. Yeah. Would Marcus trust him?
Yeah.
He's whatever the deal is, whatever the contract is.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust him.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing is that you're in a legal system that apparently Musk, even if he doesn't like it, he has been forced to go through, both through the Chancery Court of Delaware and that suit about the pedo comment where he prevailed for, technical reasons. But he had to sit there and talk, you know, he was forced to go to trial. He couldn't just walk away from it. And so if you sign a contract with him, he may try to not honor it. But in the end, it sounds like you could get more than he agreed to pay you because you'll win in court. If you're willing to put that money out there.
But the question is, does anybody trust him?
Well, plus, when I had a bad contractor and we screwed up on our house and all that, right, I didn't realize he said, I'm judgment-proof. I don't have anything.
Right.
Fine. Sue me. I got nothing.
Right.
Schmuck.
But, yeah. Licensed, bonded, insured. That's the important part.
Yeah, well, I learned that the hard way. I got a blue check mark of schmuck right on my
head. Oh, yeah. We have that on a sign in our house. Just we have a virtual sign after that. I want Elon Musk. I want to be licensed, bonded, and insured to ever trust him. I don't know.
And who would insure Elon Musk? Huh?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. Come back. We got more to talk about with our great panel, Glenn Fleischman, Glenn.Fun. What do you want to plug? Plug something.
Oh, what do I got going on? Hey, I'm gonna talk about Flong, but the show will come out after it.
Tomorrow you're gonna talk about Flong, right?
I'm talking about Flong tomorrow, but I have I'll plug something slightly obscure. If you're in the Columbus, Ohio area for the next 7 months, go to Ohio State University. Remember the Billy Ireland Cartoon Library and Museum. They have an exhibition that opens this Saturday of the Bill Blackbird collection. Bill collected, he's passed away a number of years ago, but Bill spent decades collecting, what do they call them? Not ex libris, but deaccessioned newspapers and other material from libraries, clipped the comics out or comics pages, and saved comics history for daily cartoons. He collected some of the only copies of these comics because material was lost at syndicates or was never properly cataloged. And six tractor trailer loads of it were bought by the Billy Ireland Library and tracked out there. Six tractor trailers and tracked out there 25 years ago. They've been cataloging it ever since. They get grants at different times in the middle of a grant to do a lot of work. I was just out there in Ohio on a beautiful fall week a few weeks ago to chat with curators. And I have a video about the history of comic syndication, how it actually worked in the days of metal type and printing. Will be running continuously in this exhibition that opens on Sunday. So if you're in Columbus, stop by.
Will that video also be online, Mr. Fleshman?
It will. I'm holding it back. It's an exclusive until the exhibition opens. Then I'll post it online. But you'll see the Rube Goldberg like steps that people used to go through when a cartoonist would draw something on a board. The 8 layers of processing that went from there to it appearing in a newspaper. It's kind of outrageous that it was economically feasible.
Will you post it at glenn.fun?
I certainly will post links there. You see, I've already updated it for Mastodon.
I love it. Look at that. Look at that.
While we were here.
You rock, buddy. You get it. You get it.
There we go. A little YouTube. Nice. Put it on my YouTube.
There he is.
That's my personal plug.
There he is.
Comics. Gasoline. Little 1940s Gasoline Alley action there in the header.
I used to read that when I was a kid.
It's still running. It's been running. I don't know what they're doing now. Skeezix is 105. I don't know.
Skeezix, that's right. Jeez. I did observe, though, even as a child, that the Sunday funnies were rarely funny.
Yeah, that is kind of a problem.
I was reading.
I was looking, when I was at the museum, they pulled I had a bunch of material pulled from their archives looking at primary sources and found some interesting things. One of them was old Crazy Cat comics.
And Crazy Cat.
Wow. George Harriman, that was a pretty surreal thing for the 1920s. Oh, yeah. And
you would throw bricks, comics, right?
Yeah, throw Ignatz Mouse. Which one to use is Ignatz Mouse? And I also had him pull a bunch of Barney Google because they had a big collection of Barney Google and Snuffy Smith. And I was looking at stuff visually. I was looking at the reproduction issues, but I wound up reading huge amounts of it. And boy, is it weird. It was weird, sexist, ethnic, slurry. Just like, you're like, the stuff that they were doing from the 1920s to like the 1950s was hard stuff. Occasionally funny. Popeye, the old Popeye stuff was really weird. He doesn't even show up. Popeye doesn't show up in the strip for a while.
Really?
It's called Thimble Time Theater, I think, or something like that, until he shows up and takes over. Anyway, the old comics are a very weird thing produced by a cadre of oddballs. But people read them like crazy. People bought, if you search online, you're looking for things like, weirdly like me, for Snuffy Smith or something, or Barney Google, and you'll find there were stage plays all across the country based on comic strips across the 1910s to 1940s. Very, very common. So, Annie and things like that were not new. Those were extremely popular stage shows.
This is so surreal. I'm reading this, I guess, a Sunday. It looks like a full page color Crazy Cat.
Oh my God.
In which he and Ignatz Mouse are traveling around with a door. He says, a door is so useless without a house is hitched to it. It has no, I don't know how to read that word, intrinsic value. It looks like I don't know what he's saying. He has a strange dialect, right? It lacks like the wabra rabra essentials of Hotlipness. Historically, it is all wrong and misleading. You got to be on drugs, but they weren't. It's 1940s. It's and a people, thing of beauty. It fails in every respect. The best thing you could say about it is when it is a door, not a door. And the answer is when it's a jug, which is all a joke.
Oh my God.
Like what?
And people loved, people ate this up. And Crazy Cat.
That is funny.
Crazy Cat.
You love
Crazy
it.
Crazy Cat, famously gender fluid. If you read the strips, Crazy Cat has varying gender identities.
Yeah.
And the character themselves. And George Harriman was probably secretly African American. Now, I know that sounds funny, but in the days he had
that doesn't sound funny.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to work, and there were some African American cartoons working.
He'd have to be in a black paper, a black newspaper, not in a white newspaper. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there were a handful of people, but it sounds like he tried to hide his identity.
Wow.
A lot of family stuff. But yeah, I don't think there's still total clarity. People have traced his family trees. A lot of books about him because, you know, Crazy Cat ran for a few decades.
This
influential
is my dad's
on
favorite comic.
Everything.
Yeah.
My dad was influential on all the surreal comics that followed.
Yeah.
So you read that one, you're like, how did this run? Children are reading this? What were comics like? And this was an example of it that people really loved. It sold newspapers.
It's no sign. Because you're a dormice that you got to haul a door around with you. You never see Mr. Steve Door or Mr. Torador or Mr. Huspador doing it, do you? No, sir. They got better sense. Can you imagine my little friend Ignatz Mice bothering himself with a door? Ha! Not he. He's smart, he is. Boom. Gets hit with a brick. Goodbye. Goodbye. And if you insist on carrying a door, take my advice and get a screen door. It's more sanitary and more light with weight. it's
almost
surreal.
Marx Brothers. I mean, the Marx Brothers were pretty surreal.
That's true.
Too,
and yeah,
Crazy,
yeah.
Crazy
yeah.
Cat and the Marx Brothers are not too far apart.
So I guess you didn't need drugs. They just were stony.
Oh, opium was just available in the drugstore. You didn't need a prescription
true.
For it.
They're
this
all,
might explain
they were
a lot,
hopped
too.
Up on Coca-Cola and cough syrup. Actually, that's how I do this show. also, Jeff Jarvis, tell us what you've got working
I'm
these
hopped
days.
Hopped up on Gutenberg.
Hopped up on Gutenberg. bit.ly/buyGutenberg.
My little publisher's marketplace notice went in today. Way late, but it's fine. Went in today. So I've always wanted one of these.
What's that mean?
It's a two-book deal. My Gutenberg book and my magazine book and a two-book deal to... it's in my Twitter. If you go to my
Mastodon? Yes. I can find you on
Bloomsbury,
Mastodon.
Through my agent. So officially my deal was announced today.
That is one disadvantage of not having a central place. I can't go to mastodon.com/Jeff Jarvis.
You can. You can go to mastodon.social.com/@Jeff Jarvis.
If I knew that that's where you were. Right. Exactly.
But yeah. I'm in your feed, aren't I?
Oh, yeah.
You just search for me.
Yeah. So, and then I can also on the right see I found your profile. And then I can scroll through your old
There's
posts.
A very reasonably priced book you wrote, Jeff. Sometimes hardcovers these days are like $80. So
how much is a Gutenberg parenthesis?
$27.
Well, but you can get it
$20 for an ebook.
But you can get it if you pre-order now. You can get it for
$30. As you need the hardcover edition of this book.
Yeah, clearly. You really do. This will be something suitable for framing. Put it up on the wall.
Do you like the cover?
I do. This was your final choice. Was this?
This
I like
final
it.
Choice. This
yeah,
choice.
I think you chose a good one.
And you had yep. opinions. Did you like this one?
Yes, I do.
Good.
It's nice because on the left you have the old black letter from Gutenberg Bible, and on the right you have CSS and HTML from a modern
website. I had Jake look at it to make sure it wasn't something so stupid in code that they say, "Why you put that in there?"
Oh. No Easter egg.
Jeff, I got to tell you, I wrote a book on Adobe Go Live with my friend Jeff Carlson back 20 years ago. And I think the second edition of the book, we get the cover from the cover proof before it goes to press from the publisher. And we look at it and the cover is HTML and it's all from Front Page. If you remember Microsoft Front Page.
Yeah.
And the word front page is all over it.
Oh,
we're like,
gosh.
You can't, this is Go Live. It's the competitor. You can't do this to us. Fortunately, we caught it in time.
I think this is pretty safe. There's a lot of floor and REPL and document and live document and remove, and I wonder where they got it actually.
It might look like I don't know what they got from probably their own web page or something. And so, and Mr. Glenn Fleischman has been giving me advice about the body type fonts, because we both love this story of the Doves mm-hmm. Bible font, and Glenn has done far more report. He's written about it.
Is this in the Doves Bible font? I think that'd be
no,
great.
No, because there's no italic in it. Oh, okay. You can't really do that, but I would love
should do it in black letter.
The chapter headings.
Do the whole thing in black letter.
Yeah, that's right. Nobody will read them.
Ant Pruitt, hands-on photography, twit.tv/hop and antpruitt.com/prints if you'd like to buy his beautiful photographic prints. Who's on hop this week?
Well, on hop this week, I'm actually looking at a particular product because people have been asking about a product for some of their workflow, and the company was able to lend me said product and let me spend some time with it, and I'm going to share my thoughts. But yeah, antpruitt.com/prints, that's one of the latest prints.
See, that's the Astro you were talking about.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
How did you
are
do
those
that?
Any of those Elon's birds up there you can put
I brushed those out because I did get the little streaks.
Did so, you really?
Yeah. You did.
Holy cow. How annoying is that?
Yeah.
So I take back everything I said. Unfortunately, it's too late. The FCC approved it. What's the total? I think they want 70,000 Starlink satellites, and then Amazon wants to do the same thing.
Wow. But again, initially it's for the greater good, right?
Well, that's what I thought, but I think now it's for the greater enrichment of Mr. Elon T. Musk.
Would the Google or Facebook plans have been better? The balloons or the balloons thing?
And I don't know. I mean, look, getting internet access to everybody is a high priority now. But we haven't come up with a good way to do
it. It's one of those things I don't think should be a luxury.
Right.
You know?
I agree. Our show today brought to you by CashFly. Yes, literally brought to you by CashFly. It's our content delivery network, and it has been for more than a decade. Thousands of shows brought to you on CashFly. When you click a link on our webpage, when you download it in your podcast player, it's coming to you from a server near you via CashFly. 50-plus locations around the globe brings our content closer to our listeners, and it could do the same for your content. Bring it to your customers. And let me tell you something. If you want to do video, CashFly's new ultra-low latency video streaming is amazing. I'm not talking about that unreliable WebRTC solution you might have been using. It's WebSocket live video scalable to millions of users with sub-1-second latency. That's amazing. That's better than broadcast. You can go live in hours. You're reaching your audience anywhere in the world. Oh, and check out CashFly's storage optimization system. We use this. It eliminates cache misses. You get 100% cache hit ratio and reduces the bandwidth because you don't have to go out and get stuff from your origin server. It's sitting on CashFly. So you'll take a load off your origin servers, reduce your S3 bills. It is incredible. And I do want to recommend something we also have, which is CashFly's elite managed packages, VIP treatment. I mean, honestly, nobody's got time to manage your servers. Let CashFly do it with 24/7 support, response times in less than an hour. In most cases, they already know if there's a problem and they'll be working to fix it, maybe even before you even notice. And I have to say, maybe that's happened because we've never had a problem with CashFly. Look at the big brands that use CashFly. It's not just us. So what do you get? Ultra low latency video streaming? Check. To more than a million concurrent users? Check. Lightning fast gaming, which delivers downloads faster, no lag, no glitches, no outages? Check. Mobile content optimization that offers automatic and simple image optimization so your site loads faster on every device? Check. Multi-CDN for redundancy and failover. Your traffic is intelligently balanced across multiple providers, so you always get the shortest routes and you mitigate against performance glitches. In fact, I got to tell you, CashFly has been 100% available in the past 12 months. I'm not talking 4.9s, 5.9s, 100% availability over the past year. 30% faster than other major CDNs with a 98% cache hit ratio, 100% if you get their storage optimization system. This is CashFly. This is what we love. Thank you, CashFly, for making everything we do possible. I want you to check it out at CashFly.com. And you can count on CashFly with that 24/7, 365-day-a-year priority support. They're always there when we need them. Thank you, CashFly. I say it every time. Bandwidth for This Week in Google brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. Thank you, CashFly. We didn't talk about this when it was reported earlier this month. And I mostly because I thought it was a little suspicious. It came from The Intercept, which is, I think, slowly moved into the realm of conspiracy theory. They said, The Intercept had a big story saying that leaked documents prove the Department of Homeland Security has been working with Meta and Google and other tech companies to suppress information. In fact, I saw it again just the other day from this story. Oh, Meta has a portal the feds can use anytime they want to spread disinformation. I'm sure you all saw the story, and I wonder if I made a mistake by not bringing it up. I feel like it was the right thing to do. And Mike Masnick, a couple of days ago, maybe confirmed my initial judgment by calling it BS reporting. The Intercept story about government policing disinfo is absolute garbage. He says the entire article is a complete... By the way, I get a lot of emails saying, Leo, why aren't you covering this? Well, I agree with Mike. The entire article is a complete nothing burger and is fueling a new round of lies and nonsense from people who find it useful to misrepresent reality. This goes back to CISA, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, which was started by President Trump in 2018. One of the things CISA did was start information sharing between government and private entities. In fact, it's been used several times to warn, for instance, Meta and Twitter about big disinformation campaigns, attempts to hack them. A lot of useful stuff that I think we would agree that CISA should be doing. Actual threats. But, and Mike says this, given these companies' historical distrust of government intrusion and their understanding of the limits of government authority here, the companies have been pretty attuned to any attempt at coercion. And I've heard nothing regarding CISA at all. The bombshells, he says, reveal stuff that's already completely public that anybody could have read. There was never any attempt to hide this. The public output of the meeting is available directly on the CISA site for anyone to download. So this isn't exactly a scoop. Mike points out The Intercept published a blurry draft version, making it seem more secret and nefarious, but it's all public. And isn't this what we want the government to do, to help sites like Twitter, Meta, Google stop election misinformation, bot farms from Russia and so forth? So,
well, it's like reading The Age of Mr. Shana Zuboff. I took the cover off, so I actually have the book.
It's kind of a thin like book, the way I guess you get the full.
I wish it were.
You got
this,
the
thing. But she goes on and on and on about things that we all know and just treating it through a conspiratorial lens of, oh, my God, the CIA used Google. So do we all. It was a good search engine. You know, what's your point? But when it's all presented that way, when that's your worldview, your Weltanschauung, good German word, huh, Glenn, then everything looks like conspiracy. And that's part of the problem with The Intercept, is that's how they see the world. They have from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, when Glenn Greenwald was actually saner than he is now.
Yeah. Anything with Li Fang's name on it, I'm not going to read as a straightforward piece of reporting, because he runs to Tucker Carlson to trumpet what he writes about. And he's, you know, Li Fang is actively involved in the spread of misinformation by participating in far right and, other right wing media. And it's very hard. There's certainly people who are conservative news outlets or outlets that try to straddle some line that I'm not going to raise any cavil about, because they're credible in the reporting, and they correct stories that are wrong and so forth. Tucker Carlson, when he gets forced to admit it, says he's an entertainer, you know, more or less. You're not supposed to take him seriously, just like all the other people in those not news programs on Fox. So if Li Fang is going to go there, then how do I take these statements credibly? If he can go on Rachel Maddow and he could go on Tucker Carlson, then I'd have more interest in it, right? And if he could stand up to the scrutiny of both of those, but he can't.
Just like Glenn Greenwald, who started The Intercept along with Omidyar.
I forgot her. Yeah.
Pierre Omidyar.
Pierre Omidyar, thank you. Greenwald now is just somewhere
he's
else
beyond
on Earth.
Beyond. I mean, the fact that he was being sounding favorable about Bolsonaro, who had terrorized his family and children and him, and, you know, essentially put his life in danger, I would say, if not his just his freedom. And then he's like, well, Bolsonaro. And I think if people had pointed out that, like, you know, there's a finger in the air for Greenwald, whether if Bolsonaro had actually had won, you know, where Greenwald would be putting his loyalties after that. And you're just like, my God, this man can't even act in his own self-preservation in telling the truth.
Right.
Okay. All right. So I don't feel too bad about it didn't smell past the smell test, frankly.
It's the kind of story, Leo, that you had to let settle first. You had to see where the crumbs landed.
Yeah.
Oh, the other Snowden is criticizing very nicely, though. I'm going to say Edward Snowden, who has applied for Russian citizenship. And I think, you know, let me zoom that back. But I think Snowden did a significant service to global democracy in what he revealed initially, because I think he revealed a lot of programs that weren't well understood or known about. And he provoked a massive change in the encryption and security ecosystem around the world. So bravo there. But he has applied for Russian citizenship at a spectacular time because there's nowhere else for him to go. And so I don't know under what circumstances he is being monitored or can speak freely. It seems like it would be very dangerous for him to do that. And he was like, I like Mike Masnick, but I don't think he's off target on this story. So I'm like, you know, again, I'm kind of Snowden criticizing. It doesn't make me feel any better about, Snowden criticizing Mike Masnick's take doesn't make me feel any better about the Intercept story.
Yeah. It's kind of, I guess it's through, it depends what lens you view it through. And if you expect to find conspiracy and you don't want government and Facebook or government and Twitter to be in any way communicating, then you could assume some sort of nefarious action. But on the other hand, I think you can say, but the government also has an interest in not spreading, for instance, COVID misinformation. Facebook mm-hmm. has a portal for anyone, including the government, to report misinformation. That's the portal the government uses. I don't think that that's an inappropriate thing for the government to do. But again, it depends on the lens you view it through.
Yeah, I don't want to by default trust CSA, the CIA, NSA, or any. I mean, it's kind of like trusting big pharma or insurers or whatever. It's like cable companies. I don't want to trust any of those folks. But when you see presented straightforwardly, when you see information that's publicly available and available in a straightforward way, being presented as secrets because that benefits the way the story is being told, it's very hard to take it seriously.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, I'll bring it up. You can, I invite you to, if you are listening, say, well, wait a minute, go to techdirt.com, read the November 2nd article about the Intercept story. It has a link to the story as well. You can read that story and make up your own man. But I have to say, I generally fall on the side of Mike Masnick as a trustworthy reporter.
Amen.
Yeah.
For decades now.
And somebody, we got to get back on the show again soon. Actually, next week, it's going to be very interesting on Twig. Did I mention this yet? Stacy has really had it with me, apparently. No, she had previously scheduled out of
everybody
month,
but Ann, she's had it with.
Yeah, pretty much. she only had two appearances this month. She's going to miss this week. Next week, Matthew Ingram will fill in for Stacy. She'll be back on the 23rd. And then the show after Thanksgiving, Alex Stamos
sits in for
Stacy Higginbotham. Who is Alex Stamos, you might ask? Was he the guy on different Strokes? No. Full House? No, not that Alex Stamos.
Come on, dude.
He is a former chief security officer at Facebook. He is also now at the Center for International Security and Cooperation. He'd be a good guy to ask about this story, actually. Adjunct professor at Stanford University's Center for International Security and Cooperation.
Also to ask him about the vulnerabilities of the Fediverse.
Yes. Yeah, he'll be very good to talk to security guru Alex Stamos. That's November 30th. So, yes, I know Stacy hates me. But we're just going to muddle along as best we can. And then she says she's going to be here all through December, except you're going to leave on December 14th.
One day I got to be gone for school. I'm always here. You're glad to get rid of me. I know the truth.
Actually, our best ofs are coming up. We're almost to Christmas here. We usually take the week between Christmas and New Year's off. We'll be doing that. We'll have best ofs then. But we will have a show December 21st. Take the 28th off, and then we'll be back in the new year. So just a little programming notes for the next few weeks. Let you know what's coming up. I miss Stacey, but we've been able to fill that role, the third seat, with some great people. So it's worked out pretty well.
Having Matt Mullenweg, having Rabble, Glenn, Alex Stamos. These are
Kevin
Glenn,
Marks, Kathy Gellis, Doug Rushkoff.
Some of these one-timers are interesting too.
Yeah. So as much as it hurts me.
I wonder who you're going to find to replace me on December 14th.
Maybe Mike Maznick. That'd be good.
Oh.
Or should we get somebody really cranky? No, I'm teasing. You're great, Jeff. This show is really your show. I'm just here to keep the commercials.
What would Google do?
That's right. What would Google do? Yes, well, that's right.
I have a reporter calling me tomorrow from Portugal. Say, okay, so now are you going to do What Would Musk Do?
Yeah, that'd be a fun book.
The exact opposite.
No, it'd be like Crazy Cat and Ignatz.
Yeah.
So this is a story. We'll wait till Stacey's back in a couple of weeks. Matter is here. Matter's launch event. I'm sure Stacey, that's probably where Stacey is, actually.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about Matter with her, the new Google / Apple / everybody else interoperability solution for home automation. And Stacey will be here for that in a couple of weeks. Let's do, why don't we, the Google changelog. What do you say?
The Google changelog.
I know. Crazy, huh? Well, don't get your hopes up, because it's just as dopey as ever. Google.
It's been so bad the last 2 months.
They're just not doing anything. You're right, Ant. They're not doing a thing.
They haven't done massive layoffs at Google Alphabet, right?
They're not, so they're but they are doing... on a hold. They are on a hold, yeah, just like Facebook is.
Apple is on a hold.
Everybody's on a hold now.
It's been reported they're frozen through.
I'd like to announce we're going to add 4,000 new staffers tomorrow, and I'm very excited about that. What would they do if we did? I don't know.
Carry coffee to you. Like that.
A continuous round of coffee.
It's constant.
More coffee, Mr. Laporte? More coffee? Would you like some more coffee?
Please, thank you.
Good. You want some. We'll have them bring it to Ant. There we go. A bucket brigade to Ant's house. Google Messages tests gallery-focused redesign of its photo picker.
Yay.
All right.
Okay. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but the photo picker is now coming to a gallery near you. The current picker launched in the left of the text field shows a live camera with a shortcut to open your device's gallery next to it, and the last image in your camera roll below that. The new UI still shows a viewfinder first. Let's see if I, here we go. But look at this. Look at that. Yeah, I don't know what. You something. You're going to see something completely different. You can now immediately browse folders with that shortcut, also shrunken down. Your most recent shot gets the largest preview. That's actually pretty big. Is that the camera? Or no, there's the preview, and there's the camera. As you scroll down, the pane gets larger and comfortably shows 15 pictures at a time. In the bottom right corner, you get the fabs for the camera and the folders. So there you go. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. Stadia refunds start today. I got my email. They didn't say.
How much do they owe you?
They didn't say. They didn't say how they were going to refund it. They just said, stand by.
Are they going to pay the developers back for all their wasted effort?
Yeah, no. Really? No.
Oh, they probably paid the developers to develop stuff in the first place. You remember Killed by Google? There was I think it's still running, right?
Oh, yeah.
A site called
Bigger Killed than by Better than Ever. Yeah.
I just looked it up because I remember Stadia. I was like, oh, man, they killed Stadia. And then I thought, it's been a long time since they killed a lot of stuff. There was just felt like it was a point Google was killing something every month and sometimes beloved products. I'm like, I feel like they have they've slowed down on the death rate. Their murder toll is the Google homicide.
They don't have much left to kill, Glenn. That's the problem.
Well, that's okay, too. You get it down to your core products.
Here's I'm afraid they're going to discover Blogger one of these days.
No.
Don't tell them. They don't even know they're running it. Here is the from Stadia, the email I received as part of Stadia's wind-down process today. We're beginning to process the refunds we outlined in our September 29th announcement. We're getting in touch. How exciting. To let you know what to expect over the next couple of weeks. We will attempt to automatically refund each transaction of the form of payment used to make the purchase. If that doesn't work, you're going to get an email with a link. For Stadia players that have deleted their Google account, we're still going to attempt to automatically refund the transaction. When will you receive your refund? You might ask. We ask for your patience. We expect the majority of refunds to be processed by January 18th, 2023. When will I get my... That's not soon. When will I get my Google hardware purchase refund? We're working through this process and still anticipate the majority of refunds will be processed by January 18th, 2023.
All Q, no A.
Yeah.
How much money you think this is being refunded?
It's impossible. I mean, they killed it because it was a flop, right? So it's impossible. Mm. I know a lot of people who bought games. You're not going to get your monthly fees, as I understand it from the previous message. You're not going to get your monthly fees refunded. But games you purchased, and more importantly, hardware you purchased, like if you got that Google Pro joystick, which I ordered then canceled, so I don't think I actually was surprised to get this.
Is there any? It's like the QCAT. Is there any hack of this hardware you could do with this stuff?
Well, yeah, I guess you could use it as a Bluetooth controller. I guess I don't know. That's a good question. I will.
Stacey could use it for IR.
Probably could.
Open and close the blinds. Here's one you're going to want to know about. Actually, this is good news. If you buy Google One, you get a VPN.
Oh. Yeah, this is good.
This is really good. Now you're going to be able to use it with your desktop, Windows or Mac.
Yeah.
Who needs that when you got a Chromebook?
Actually, they don't mention Chromebook availability. Google One VPN is those of you who are on the available to those of you on the premium Google One plan. That's 2 terabytes or higher. I do pay for that one. Or
I think I'm paying for that.
Yeah, not the 100 gigabyte basic or the 200 gigabyte standard.
No, I think I might be.
Yeah, if you're paying $10 a month.
Oh, maybe not, though. Well, it'd be worth it, though, if you got... What's 2 terabyte? That's $10, yeah, $10 a month, month. For $100. And that'd be worth it with a VPN.
Yeah, and you can share it with 5 users.
Oh, yeah.
So you get the family. You get 10% off on the Google Store. So, yeah, I mean, I thought it paid for itself. I thought it was worthwhile.
Yeah, $10 a month is a good value.
You get Google Workspace Premium. Did I say gurgle? You get Google Workspace. You know what you get. Starting with longer group meet calls, YouTube live streaming recording, and noise cancellation. You'll have to install the VPN from the Google One website by going to Benefits, VPN Protection for Multiple Devices, and Download App. I will try it. I'll let you know.
Do you know if Mr. Gibson had anything nice to say about their particular VPN service?
He didn't. Oh. I'm thinking
he's picked through a few over the past.
Yeah. If it uses, let me see if it says what it uses. If it uses WireGuard, then it's good. I feel like it does. In the coming weeks, Google release an updated independent audit for the VPN on Windows and Mac. So you'll be able to see how it does. So that's good.
Jeff, they didn't mention Chromebook because they forgot they make Chromebook as well.
So. Yes. Yeah. Chromebook, what's that?
They desert me.
Some days they remember.
Plus, if you're workplace, you can't use it anyway because they'll stop you from doing that. Yeah. Whatever they call it this week.
Yeah. So, I'm on the 2 terabyte plan, I believe. Uh-huh. Yeah, the $99 a year. Yeah. In fact, I just got billed for it. I didn't know they have a 10 terabyte plan. 20 terabyte plan. Wow.
How much is that? Available with monthly billing. How much?
It doesn't say.
Does it have to ask?
If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
A lot of money.
Eventually I'm going to pay.
$50 a month for the 10 terabytes and $100 a month for 20 terabytes. That's a lot of storage.
I pay Apple for a couple terabytes. I pay Dropbox, Microsoft included in Office 360. I pay Google. Like, how many terabytes do I need?
Have I told you about Truebill lately? our sponsor, Rocket Money. Yeah. Go ahead.
5 and 10 terabytes. That's starting to look pretty good now that I think about it.
You can use it. You have a lot of pictures.
I got so many files all over the place, and that's not a bad idea.
The November security patch came out for your Pixel 7 and 7 Pro, and 3 fixes included. Fix for an issue in battery and charging causing increased power consumption with certain apps. A fix for green display flickering in certain conditions. Power consumption has been optimized to improve thermal performance under certain conditions. And there's a fix for an issue occasionally causing Photos app to crash. And, of course, there's the security fixes. But I had downloaded it the other day. I think it's a small download, 26 megabyte download. And it applied pretty quickly. So if you've got a Pixel 7 or 7 Pro, get that. And finally, optimized YouTube Shorts player for your TV. Look at that. Isn't that great? You got a beautiful widescreen TV. And you got this little vertical video on there.
That's great.
Yeah. Thank God they're bringing Shorts to TV screens. That's all I can say. That's all I got. That's all. And that's a Google changelog. That's it. You know what? I'm sure that people will watch the shorts. It's not exactly TikTok.
Is it as good as Quibi, though?
Oh, Quibi. Yeah. Quibi, right? Well, you at least unlike Quibi, you can. Quibi, right? Unlike Quibi, you could put it on your big screen TV. Quibi. No,
it wasn't around long enough to learn how to pronounce his name.
No, exactly.
That, those are brain cells. You have given up. You don't care anymore. Did you know, let's see, this is all from our co-host contributed section.
Well, there's not much there. I will
Google and Renault are developing a software-defined vehicle together.
What?
We're going to have an expert from Renault on tomorrow, I think, on Tech News Weekly.
Oh.
Hmm. Sounds automotive right. Android.
Can you buy a Renault in America?
Now you're asking a question I just don't know. Renault, Nissan, Mitsubishi. Hmm. So I guess you can buy a Nissan. I know you can.
Oh, Mitsubishi. I see. Okay. All right.
Partnered with Google to integrate. Renault's is the number two auto company in the world, I think, to integrate its software platform and services like Google Maps and Assistant into vehicles. Now Renault Group, Renault, Dacia, Alpine, and Mobilize is expanding that partnership to develop a software-defined vehicle. So that's an interesting term. In ham radio, you have software-defined radios. You used to have tubes and dials and resistors and things to tune in frequency. Now, most ham radios, they're just computers, and the radio is software-defined. You can even put a ham radio on your phone with software. So what is a software-defined vehicle?
That's what I wanted you to explain to me.
I have no idea.
You just listen turn to ham some radio. Dials and it turns from a Porsche into a turns from a Porsche into a Tesla truck, I think.
According to Engadget, is to deliver new on-demand services and continuous upgrades to the car, with Google acting as the preferred cloud provider. To accelerate development, the companies will work together on a digital twin or virtual version of the car. It'll use advanced AI capabilities to allow the companies to more easily integrate new features and services into the vehicle, while allowing for new onboard in-car services and offboard applications. Continuous upgrades.
Yeah, there's nothing that says safety like continuous upgrades.
According to the companies,
Glenn.
A software-defined vehicle will allow predictive maintenance and better detection and rectification. That sounds painful. Of failures in near real time, if necessary. It'll also allow for I had a rectification last week at the doctor's. It'll also allow for
They gave you sedation.
Yeah, they did. I'm here for my rectification. It'll also allow for a personalized experience.
Tell you it's not called that.
It'll also allow for personalized.
This is what happens when Stacy's gone.
I would never have said that had Stacy been here.
Mr. Laporte, we're going to need you to leave the hospital.
I think so. Doctor told me I had rectification. It'll allow for personalized experience that adapts to driving behavior. It'll adapt to your driving behavior, like frequent destinations, EV charging stations used, etc. You want the real bottom line? It'll also help the companies build, quote, insurance models based on actual usage and driving behaviors. So apparently that's what a Tesla is a software-defined vehicle.
If you'd like to turn left ahead, you'll need to watch this five-minute advertisement first. Or pay for the premium, the premium package for immediate left turn.
Did you see that Berkeley has followed in New York City's footsteps and has banned the return on right turn on red?
No.
That passed.
Where does Berkeley think they are?
That passed?
That passed. So.
Oh, man.
The right turn on red.
Oh, they're just so wacky.
Well, wait a minute. It's
probably look to left on red because it's liberal. I don't know.
Everywhere except the New York City allows right. that, but New York now Berkeley. I don't know if it's done. It was approved by the city council. They're going to put up signs all over the city. That says
that'll work. That'll be great.
Yeah.
The right turn on red is an almost uniquely American maneuver, says the San Francisco Chronicle.
It's Californian. California invented this. It's a Woody Allen joke about the only
that's
thing
right.
California
Woody Allen
did.
Said that. Largely prohibited in other countries, most states enabled the move during the fuel crisis of the 70s as a gas-saving measure. Immediately it started killing pedestrians. 60% increase in pedestrian accidents after right on red was implemented. 84 people die every year run down by cars turning right on red, the majority of which are pedestrians and cyclists.
I still remember in 1993.
Coming here to California, I had to learn to really, really look for the bike lane.
We just down the street, somebody got run over. Same thing, right turn on red.
No.
Slow, wasn't moving fast, hit the guy, knocked him over. He hit his head and died. Yeah. So it is dangerous. Yeah. Yeah, that was just down the street.
1993, I'm driving a friend. We're driving back from a wedding in Indiana. We get to Manhattan. It's 2 a.m. I'm facing the Church of St. John the Divine. It's a red light. And I turn to my friend and say, hey, I can make a right turn on red in New York City, can I? And I start to go, and he says, no. And just as he says it, a police car goes by. It's the only car on the road across us. And I was like, And then we found parking on the next block. So that was
karma.
Holy night.
Karma.
Holy night.
Wow. So
right turn on red.
I don't know how I got on that.
How the hell did you get on that?
Are we still in the change log?
We're in the software defined vehicle.
Oh yeah, we're software defined vehicles. That's right.
Car. All they have to do is make the right turn on red a premium feature. I keep saying.
That's right.
You know, Berkeley, you want it right turn on red, you gotta pay, you know, you just pay for it.
Like this story just in from supplychaindive.com.
See what I do for you? See how I comb the world.
Where'd you find that?
That is a great publication. Now, I know I have a friend who writes for them. That's a great publication.
Oh.
That's a very fine publication.
Okay.
They're one of the good trade journals out there.
Look for this holiday season an Amazon electric van coming to a neighborhood near you over 100 cities.
Yeah. They look for it. Don't listen for it because it's going to sneak up on you.
Right.
I'm not so happy about that.
They're from
Rivian.
I
think they should make their vehicles make more noise, actually.
In a way, we have a plague of cars that sound like hornets because all the electric vehicles make sounds, mine included, that are, in most part, not felicitous. But they need to because of, you know, blind pedestrians and others who aren't, you know, are listening for a motor and they.
Fisker makes a noise.
What's it sound like?
Oh, yeah.
They all do.
It sounds like
it
sounds like an actual combustion engine.
I get it.
You know, I mean, it sounds fake, but you actually hear it. There's a car coming.
Did you play something, Leo, where you could change the sounds?
There's an aftermarket on the Mustang Mach-E, which I have, that'll make it sound like. I just did Jack Benny's Maxwell, a little callback to your favorite TV show.
I remember that. Yeah, I did watch Jack Benny's show in reruns.
TikTok slashes global revenue targets by at least $2 billion. Meanwhile.
So is TikTok taking over the world, or is it just another company that has problems?
Targets cut by 20%. They had initially projected revenues between $12 and $14 billion this year, which is not huge compared to other big tech companies.
No.
That's for a whole year. I think Apple and Google make more than that in a quarter. But actual revenue now believed closer to be $10 billion for the year. So, yeah, it's not, that's interesting. Here from another fine publication, the Noema magazine.
Is that how you pronounce it? Oh, I guess you do, because it has the...
Noema.
What do you call that? What do you call that line?
Accent aigu.
Oh.
Or an acute
no,
accent.
No, it's not an accent. It's a... I'm going to tell
is
you.
Is that a long E, so that makes it Noema?
Hmm? I think it might.
Is it, it's not tilted. It's just a line, so that's the question.
It's a Macron.
A Macron. Actually.
Oh. Yes. Oh,
like the president.
Apparently, its name derives from the ancient Greek Macron, which means long, which means literally
so that's
long.
The long vowel. It's not an, it's not
got,
an acute
you got typography
accent.
Questions? We got the answers right here.
Yeah, not flong, but long.
So it would be pronounced not Noema, but Noema.
Noema is long.
Okay. Noema.
Doesn't that mean, doesn't Noema mean something about information, the noosphere?
Oh, the noosphere. Oh, boy, you are really good. Okay.
Wow.
You are
but
really
see, when
good.
We get Glenn here, it goes, except when you talk about rectitude, everything moves up. But then you ruin it.
Noema. That's what I mental. I see you looked at mental object.
Mental object. Wow.
Noema.
It derives from the Greek word Noema.
Noema. I'm just going to do. I'm just going to
derive from itself.
German Greek.
It takes
literally
very
took a word from Greek and.
It's from the Greek word from rectify. In any event, according to Noema, online mobs act like flocks of birds.
This is by Renee DiResta, who's a major disinformation researcher at Stanford.
Hmm. Oh, I thought you meant to say a source of. No, researcher of. Oh. Thank God.
Oh, yeah. That took a wrong turn.
Online. Okay, what's that word again?
Murmurations. Yes, the murmurations of starlings are very famous. I hope you've all seen this where... Yeah. Starlings are flying around, amazing. And they have this amazing pattern that they follow. If you've never seen it, it's quite breathtaking. It's usually at sunset in the evening.
I was thinking about this where, you know, there used to be so many passenger pigeons before they were hunted to extinction. The contemporary accounts are that they blackened the sky. There were so many flying above America. Just think about, we get that with crows in my neighborhood sometimes.
Yeah.
But they blackened the sky. They just
the difference is
part of it.
Crows aren't good eating. However,
you've tried.
Yes.
And say, how do you know?
Our social media fox first formed. Oh, boy.
It's okay. You know.
Three times fast, please.
Social media fox first formed in the mid-00s. Is that the aughts? How would we say that?
The aughts.
Yeah, as the internet provided a new topology of human connection. At first, we ported our real geographically constrained social graphs. Who is this guy? To nascent online social networks. Dunbar's number held. We had maybe 150 friends, probably fewer, we saw and commented on their posts. However, it quickly became a point of pride to have thousands of friends and thousands of followers, or in my case, millions. The friend or follower... the friend or follower count was prominently displayed on a user's profile, and a high number became a heuristic for assessing popularity or importance. Friend became a verb. I'm going to friend you. We friended not only our friends, but our acquaintances, their friends, and their friends' acquaintances. I don't know what this has to do with mobs.
It's okay. Go on.
It goes on and on and on.
Yeah, it does. Never mind. Go on. Anyway. It's a pretty picture of birds.
It was a pretty picture of birds. And now we know the Greek word for Noema.
Are we back to Twitter? Pretty pictures of birds?
Yes.
I put stuff in here, then I sometimes take it out. But I was very.
What's the word for.
Go ahead.
How do you say tweet in Greek? That's my question.
Huh.
Probably tweet.
Let's go to the terminal.
Wouldn't it be funny if it was rectify? Okay.
Zoomtopia. The reason I put that in there.
Why did you put Zoomtopia in there?
15 minutes in, they have a comic on stage at Zoomtopia. If you go in, I could not figure out, no, a little farther, it's a woman.
Making
a
joke.
Why is she there? Yeah. No, it was back. It was back 15 minutes in. You were way beyond.
Oh, I don't have.
You did a whole routine, and I don't understand at all. Never mind. Don't even do it.
No, let's. Is it funny?
No,
it
wasn't.
Is this her?
There she is.
Oh, I feel bad for any comic that has to do.
Oh, wow. This is. Oh, really? I'm so mortified.
Is she famous?
I apologize.
Yeah. She was on Mad TV.
I was told.
That's Born Alex.
I was told it was a Zoom event and I didn't wear pants.
Oh, God.
I love so Alex. Sorry. Holy.
She's probably too funny for this
so
event.
Fired. I still look Alex really cute, though. I am mortified. And then the guy backstage is like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. There's a podium, and it's invisible.
I didn't see
Thank you for that. She's oh, good. My God.
Wait a minute. I got to point something out.
What is this?
During this Zoom event, there are people.
People.
Behind right. her on
on
Zoom.
The walls.
Zoom.
Yeah. Of course, it's Zoomtopia.
Yeah. Andy Carlucci, who is doing our Zoom ISO for us, made
Ready?
This wall.
Go.
Oh, sweet.
Wow.
Oh, right in the freaking tiara.
She's, you know what? I've got my 1 degree of separation is I went to college with this. Phil Lamar. He was in Pulp Fiction. And,
oh, wow. Phil Lamar.
Yeah, still a little touch with him. A very nice fellow.
I will give her a lot of great voice. She's probably making $30,000 for that appearance.
Oh,
corporate events are a pain in the ass. They're horrible. They don't laugh.
Yeah.
And you have to get the executive's name into your bit, which is always awful.
Without insulting the executive.
Right. I know this because I did an event for HBO 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
Had to follow Lewis Black. That was my first mistake.
Oh, dude.
Oh, jeez.
Never do it.
Where's the tape
oh
of
my
that?
God.
Oh, I hope
Here comes
God.
The boring geek.
It was in Palm Beach. It was at the beautiful pink hotel there. Not Mar-a-Lago, but next door. And
do you follow Lewis Black with Dev Noll?
It's a painful memory. Let me just, two words.
Oh, at.
Two
oh,
words.
At.
Flop sweat. It was awful.
Flop sweat.
Leo, I can't top that, but I went to a friend's wedding, and she asked me, dear friend, she asked me to give a handful of speeches after the wedding, right? And I was delighted to do so. Love this person. And what I didn't know is I knew her brother is actually, I don't want to drop names, he's a comedy writer for a major television show. And what I didn't know was he was going to deliver his speech before mine.
Oh,
so,
God.
I think I did okay. Yeah. His was pretty funny,
he
but
killed,
it was also very personal.
Yeah.
It was very personal, but it was a professional humor writer. And then there was me. But
right.
I had pathos.
Right. You had pathos. Yeah. You can always, you can turn those events into something if the people know you. If, on the other hand, you were a stranger brought in.
Oh, my God. Lewis Black. You're following Lewis Black.
It's not good.
No, everyone's deaf after that, too. They're like, I can't even hear this guy. Leo is.
And I'm going, I'd like to show you a lineup of the new smartphones for 1998. very exciting.
And then somebody find a tape.
Oh, my God. And then Apple just announced that you could advance your keynotes using the phone. So I tried doing that, and it didn't work.
No.
So I have to go over to my laptop, which is sitting on the stage at the front.
Off the stage,
geek! I'll be with you in a moment. I just have to get this. And I'm sweating. It's starting to pop up on my... Oh, God. What
we were
going
to offer him a 20-part miniseries, but then he did that.
That's right. I'd like to thank Carly Fiorina for inviting me here.
Yeah, really.
I could have been Tony Soprano, and look what happened.
I came off the stage, and the woman gave me the check, but boy, she was not happy to do. Thank you. I'm just going to go to my room now.
Should I give you my nightmare one? You're reminding me here.
It's not fun.
Not that scale at all. Not that scale at all. I was speaking to all the top editors of the New York Times at an offsite. They all hated me. I was this blogger guy.
Ah.
Journalism professor, blogger guy. Couldn't stand it, but they decided to invite me in, right? I was in atrial fibrillation at the time. I felt like crap.
Oh,
I had
boy.
A PowerPoint to go through in this dining room. And I did, you know how you make a PowerPoint and you put all the extra slides at the end?
Yeah.
Right? And you end up with lots and lots and lots of slides, but you're never going to get to them because they're always the end. Right. You always at the beginning. Yeah. I accidentally hit the button that went all the way to the end of the slides.
I
went back, they all just, the room groaned. I said, no, really, don't worry.
I'm at 276. Wait a minute. I got to go back to the beginning. Oh, yeah. They not happy at all.
No, that was
actually, I would do that on purpose.
Yeah.
Just to get out.
Let's start with slide one. That would be funny, actually.
It would be.
All right. It is time for us to wrap up the show, and we're going to start doing that with your picks and numbers and all of that. First, I'll start with the Flong Master himself. Mr. Glenn Fleischman, your pick of the week, my friend.
My pick of the week is a webcomic name, a long-running comic strip, several years by Alex Norris, who's an English person. And the reason I'm picking it, it's a very funny strip. If I describe it to you, you'll recognize it immediately because it is everywhere on the internet. It's a blobby character who says, "Oh, no," with no punctuation. So it's always the unintended consequence thing. It's very funny. It's very delightful. And the person who creates it is really...
Is it
incredible.
Doris McComics? Is that it?
That's the previous one.
Okay.
So this is called Webcomic Name, and that's the popular... one.
Boy, that'll Google well.
Yeah, I know, it's funny. But so Alex is facing, so Alex currently has, I'm bringing this up because Alex currently has a GoFundMe going on to raise money for a lawsuit because somebody a few years ago Alex gave them rights to produce some board games based on a webcomic name, and this person has proceeded to produce other products, not any board games, and try to even take the rights for the name and so forth. It's a really lousy situation. Alex posted the GoFundMe and said, I can't talk about it much, but you can find the lawsuit online, which I did, and I read through it very quickly, and holy cow, I'm not a lawyer, but it feels like this is a situation. If you Google the situation, you'll find other campaigns that the same person who Alex is suing was involved with. This person's company is banned from Kickstarter. They're banned from board game fundraising sites.
Do they ever, they never really produce a game. They're scammers.
The sad part is they do. They just take on too much and they're erratic and they don't charge the right shipping. They're basically a bunch of completely flipped out. I mean, I don't know them, but you're reading the accounts. The reporting is that they cannot meet their obligations. And in particularly in Alex's case, it sounds like they're taking advantage of them. So I really like Alex's work, liked it for years. It's made me happy. And so I'm just mentioning that they've got, you can go and support them directly. You can go and contribute to their legal defense. The problem is they're in the UK and they have to sue in the United States. And as we all know, even when you're in the right, it's very expensive. And even if you win a lawsuit, if the people you're suing don't happen as in Jeff's case with a contractor, perhaps don't have any money, then it can be hard to actually wind up coming out ahead. So I would love to, I'd love Alex to succeed. And there's a lot of great web cartoonists out there who, there's different people who over pandemic, especially, when your mental health is suffering from all the stuff that we went through in the last few years, and you go online and you see these things that make you feel happy. And I'm like, I want this person to succeed and someone else is trying to tear them down. So that is my pick of the week is Webcomic Name. Go read it, enjoy it, and support Alex in some way if you feel you like their work.
And his fundraiser is at GoFundMe. If you search on GoFundMe for Alex Norris, Oh No Comics. The good news is he's very close to his goal of $100,000. People are
100,000 pounds.
Pounds.
Well, sorry, that's dollars. It's practically dollars.
It's practically dollars.
It might even be less now. I don't know.
That's $50 now. Sorry.
It's 10 Dogecoin.
Yeah. Yeah. But do donate. I think that's a great cause. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no. Every one of the comics ends with a punchline. Oh, no.
What? One of their best comics is a comic about being successful doing Oh No Comics. It really gets kind of meta. It ends, of course, Oh No.
How do you say the Oh No? I mean, are there different ways of saying Oh No?
It's kind of like Oh No.
Oh No.
It's because there's no punctuation. It's just
Oh No.
And the face is blank. It's Oh No.
Oh No. But sometimes it's Oh No.
And some, is it? Oh,
well, so look at this. Let's keep this casual. Yes, casual. Extremely not casual. Oh no! Not oh no! You know
this
what I'm saying?
Like it's XKCD, where I just love that. With I would say Randall Monroe is brilliant. Maybe he does not have the same level of artistic talent as Alex. You can see a little more, whatever. But it's I love your dog. I love your dog.
I love your dog.
I love to see how much expression people can get away with the most minimal form and be so, it's, kind of a New Yorker thing sometimes.
Yeah, very nice.
It makes me think I could do this, but of course I can't.
Right. You
can, no, I know. I think about it. I'm like, well, I could write a punchline, 1,000 punchlines a year. Sure, go do it now.
They always said Bing Crosby's secret to success was everybody thought they could sing like him, but obviously nobody could. Did I bring up Bing Crosby?
You did?
Bingster.
And Jack Benny? in one show. and Milton Berle.
Yeah, right.
Wow. Mr. Jeff Jarvis, number of the week this week?
Well, I'm not going to do the layoff tracker because that's too depressing.
Oh, is it depressing? It's layoffs.fyi if you're curious, yeah, but it's very.
And right now, Facebook's at the top of it. I just saw a friend of mine on Facebook who's out of a job right now.
So I'm sorry.
All right. So, drone ads over New York. I saw this on line 25.
For Candy Crush Saga.
Candy Crush.
Yes.
So the still photos are there. I know we're an audio show primarily, but drones, nothing safe, right? Poor ant can't take pictures of the Milky Way because of all these satellites, and now there's drones in the sky. If you go to the line below that, Leo, there's video on YouTube.
So people were upset about this.
Well, yeah, because it's spamming the sky.
It's New York, man. It's the city of... Yeah, and it is for Candy Crush, after all.
And who is Candy Crush still alive? Who knows?
Apparently 500 drones.
Oh, yeah, people still play it.
To form an ad in the sky. It's like putting Coca-Cola on the moon, I guess. Thing is, it wasn't permanent.
No, but...
But they don't own the sky.
Yeah, so what's going to happen is now you're going to have Donald Trump ads up in the sky?
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, we got. I think yeah.
Well, those would all crash, you know, and they would injure
all
people standing. Well,
those are the Elon Musk ones.
These are pretty cool looking. Anyway,
they are cool. They are cool. Yeah. But if you want to see them put to a better use, the next line down.
Oh, okay. Let's check out the next line.
I searched the web for you, Leo. I searched long and hard.
Drones. So this is an Instagram complete sequence. Incomplete monuments.
This is really cool. So you see, that's
finally, like Sagrada Familia is finished. No, right. It's just drones.
Go to the next one.
The Colosseum.
The Colosseum. Oh, isn't that cool?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So this is not drawn on after the fact. This is in real time in the real world that they do this. Wow.
Interesting.
Wow. What is this? Is this the library at Corinth? I can't. It doesn't say, does it?
Doesn't say on this one. I don't know.
Look at that. That's kind of amazing. All it stands is just some pillars, but that's the cathedral that they used to hold up. That's very cool.
Right. Mm. And then Notre Dame.
How Notre Dame looks now?
No, it's not. No, I'm not.
Oh my God, how sad.
No, it's not. No, I don't think
so. I was in tears watching that burn.
I don't know.
2 years ago or so?
Yeah, they are actively rebuilding, and I want to go to Paris and see it. I wish this doesn't say, unfortunately, what they were.
No, it doesn't.
So that's I recognize that one. And that one. So it's a duo of Dutch artists. Let's go to their website maybe. Yeah, domusweb.it. They do other things too, so it's not
all drones or just art?
No, all kinds of stuff.
Una rovina.
Yes, it's a nice Italian. Una bola luminosa nel disegno distretta di Londra.
Very nice.
I love it, Italian. Shutterstock.
Shutterstock.
Oh, there's a robot taking Ant's place.
Robot. Poper una nostra dedicata dell'arte e disegno gonfiabili.
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 Where are the drones?
Bosca della musica. Honda, this is just a news feed, it looks like. This doesn't look like...
Oh, is that all it is?
This doesn't look like them.
No. Okay.
Maybe there's a story about them, but I haven't found it yet. Anyway.
Can you Google that? Well, never mind. We've done it.
At this point, I'm thinking about cutting the entire segment out.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I give you... Ant Pruitt and his thing of the week.
Man, the pressure.
Yes. You're kind of like me following Louis Black.
Luma Fusion was released in beta for Android and Chrome OS.
I can recommend this
Luma Touch
with such high praise. It's great.
It's really good on iOS.
Yeah.
And it's now available on beta for Android. And it'll cost you now. I believe you can get it for $20 if you order the beta. And once it goes public, you'll get the public upgrade, but you don't have to worry about paying the regular $30.
But look at this.
Price.
It's also, because it's on Android, available for Chrome OS.
Chrome OS.
Which
now,
means,
I wanted to mention that because of a certain Chrome OS user here. It's pretty good. It's pretty good stuff.
So this is their video editing program.
And I'm looking forward to it because it's on Android now. I needed something that's going to replace, Adobe Rush. You know, I mentioned InShot previously on the show, and because Adobe Rush just wasn't cutting it for me. And I know Wintuit Dao is working at Adobe now and supposedly working on that
She'll fix it for
me. I hope she can fix that. But this right here is an option, and this is the beta from Luma Fusion on Android and Chrome OS. And right before the show started, Canon PR, one of my friends, I love her, she's so kind, she emailed me Canon's webcam utility is upgraded to a pro version, EOS Webcam Pro. They announced that back in 2020 when the pandemic started because people, of course, had to do Zoom calls and things like that. And you plug in your Canon camera to your computer and use it as a webcam instead of the...
Wow.
The other ones that are out there. But it had limitations because it's plugged in via USB. But now with Pro, you're going to get full HD up to 60 frames per second and some other options, as well as plugging in multiple cameras via USB to do Pro calls and live streaming and stuff. So that was announced today. I think it's like $50 a year or something like that. I can't remember, but I just got this before.
It works with the 1Ds, the 5Ds, the 6, 7,
it's a bunch 8, of cameras yeah. I'm going to work with.
All the R series, the Rebels. Wow, that's pretty good. That's
yeah,
a pretty
so if you
broad
have an
range.
Old Canon Rebel.
Yeah.
You're good to
or
go.
Even an old Power Shot, apparently. So we will work with the old Power Shots. I think there are probably people who have these. These are out of date by now. But you know what? They'd be fine for
a nice webcam.
Yeah.
Totally did.
Cool.
And I wanted to share this Instagram account because I find it funny. Now, not all of them are funny, but it's been a nice break on Instagram. It's called Dare I Ruined It. Y'all have probably seen this already.
I haven't. I'm going to follow it.
But it is Dare I Ruined It. And they basically take songs and remix them or scenes and remix them with some pretty fascinating audio.
So this
audio.
Is the very tense scene in A Few Good Men. But they're going to remix it with music from
Handle the Truth.
Toy Story.
You can't
handle the truth.
Handle the truth. Are we clear? You can't handle the truth.
Okay, that's just silly. I don't know who's going to take this down. There, I ruined it. That is very good. That is very good. You can't handle the truth.
That's fair use under the transformative property.
It's transformed by something. How about mixing Curb Your Enthusiasm with Enter Sandman?
Oh, man.
What? Oh, gosh. It starts out with it muted every time. How fast can I click? There we go.
Wow.
Well, after never end. Boom. This is very surreal. Very, very surreal.
Modern version.
Wow.
That's great.
Do we want to do one more? How about Bohemian Rhapsody and the Beach Boys? Let's hear it.
Yeah, that one's. Yeah, just listen to that one.
Wouldn't it be nice if we were older? Then we wouldn't have to wait so long.
Oops, I
like, how
like
put
it.
The caption in there. He's like, it's not bad.
Very funny.
It's not exactly a mashup. It's interesting. Yeah. All right. I just gave it a little.
I started following it. Yeah. It's just funny. A nice little breakup in Instagram and gives me a smile.
And look at the Rancho Cotati athlete of the week, if you will.
I'm quite proud of old Hardhead. He keeps getting recognition, so now I just need more of these recruiters to recognize him and take the pressure off of my wallet come college time. But shout out to the Hardhead as they get ready for playoffs.
What's your alma mater, Glenn? Can you get them on the line? And
my alma mater, you mean one of the most winning football squads of all time, Yale University?
Exactly. Yeah.
I want you to do better for your child. I really do.
Just say he wants a full ride.
Look, it's done. Look, among Ivy League teams, Yale's done remarkably well.
You know, so, it's the original The Game, right?
So yes. I'm just saying. Yes. Wasn't football invented at Yale?
It was. That's right. Yeah.
It was so great, Mr. Laporte left.
Yeah, I had to leave. I was asked to take my headphones and get the hell out
of
here.
We talked about rustication before, didn't we?
Yes, I was rusticated.
I went to Northwestern.
It's not my fault. Lewis Black... the class ahead of me.
Rectified or rusticated?
Rusticated and rectified. And we have a show title, ladies and gentlemen. You can't end the show until we have a show
title.
That's
why it goes on so long. We got to wait.
That's right. Hey, Glenn, you're the best. It's always great to see you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you on Mastodon. Tomorrow, give us a plug for the thing you're doing tomorrow.
Well, it won't be rerun, so you have to go in live. I have to get up at 4:30 a.m. It's at 5 a.m. Pacific, noon GMT. I'm doing a live talk to explain Flong and stereotypes, the missing pieces in printing history that helped accelerate printing across the 19th century. It's my specialty area of interest.
You know what? If you follow him on Mastodon, he has all the information you need right there. How about
that?
That's
right. Can I say this right? It's at twit.social/@GlennF. Is that right?
Yeah.
Did I say it right?
Yeah.
That's a little complicated, but not
right
too bad.
Right there. Glenn F. All right. And yes, that's all you need.
His blog is verified because he's smart.
Because he owns it.
I use that Relmy.
Hello, folks. Relmy.
Bartender Relmy.
Relmy. There it is. Warburg.sas.ac.uk.
Yeah, some very fine people in one of my mentors there.
Long time no see is the title.
Sorry.
Oh, God.
So long, been good to know you.
It was a toss up, wasn't it?
That's right.
It was a toss up.
Options there. Fun.
That's great. Thank you, Glenn. Great to have you here. We really appreciate it. We'll see you again real soon. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis. As everyone knows, he's the director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Have you seen Craig lately?
We saw him a couple weeks ago. He went to Europe, I think. He was back through New York. What did I just compare notes with him on? Something. When we talk about Chromebooks.
Just tell him we still sing his praises, quite literally.
He knows. Always. He knows. Okay, he watches often.
Every show.
Say hi, Craig.
It must be pretty funny, actually, for him to watch his show and hear us singing his name every single time. Twice.
He chortles every time, I think. Yes.
I think so. Aunt Pruitt, we sing your praises at twit.tv/HOP for hands-on photography. Don't forget his prints at antpruitt.com/prints.
Thank you. People have been ordering prints. I appreciate that.
I you're just getting better and better too. I love your stuff. It's so good. Love that astrophotography. Really.
Thank
pretty.
You. Yeah. That was taken in Oregon. I pulled over on the side of the road when it was dark.
Oh, that was handheld?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I was tripod. Say, yeah.
I had a tripod.
You pulled over and stayed for a bit. Thank you, sir. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, especially you Club Twit members who make us smile every day. Woo-hoo. $7 a month. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit to join. You get all the shows ad-free, and you don't even get this promotional mention. You also get access to the Twit Discord, which is, so much fun. Discord is my, my other choice for the best way to socialize. I just really love it. And you'll like our Discord because it's just a bunch of great people. About 3,000 people in the Discord, 5,000 members in the club. It's great. And, of course, you get the Twit Plus feed, which has all sorts of material that we don't normally put out, including our Hands on Mac show with Micah Sargent, Hands on Windows with Paul Thurrott, the Untitled Linux show with Jonathan Bennett, and a whole lot more. And it really helps us keep the lights on. And
speaking of Mr.
Important.
Bennett, we have his AMA next week, so join the club and get your questions in.
Good. I love Jonathan. He does a great job.
He's such a good one, man. And he's a good one.
November 17th, 9 a.m. Ant is the community manager, so that's the key. That's the key. He's doing a great job. Thank you, Ant.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do the show every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. You can watch or listen live at live.twit.tv, chat live at irc.twit.tv. That's open to all. After the fact, You could chat with us on our forums at twit.community, also open to all, or on Mastodon. Join the Twit social Mastodon instance and talk to all three of these guys, among others. You could also get every episode of the show to twit.tv/twig. You could subscribe in your favorite podcast player. There's even a full-time YouTube channel devoted to This Week in Google. However you do it, we want to see you here next week. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android on twit.tv.